is Nick Briggs, and you're listening to Traveling the Vortex.
We built this city. We built this city on rock and roll. We built this city. We built this city on rock and roll.
We've joined the Doctor as he travels the Vortex and landed episode number 82. And yes, Traveling the Vortex is the 701st greatest wonder of the universe. I'm Keith.
It is now. Everyone melted.
Well, now we've just moved up on the list.
We moved up on the list.
Right.
We're 700 now.
All right, we are 700.
Claiming it. I'm Sean.
And I'm Glenn.
How are you guys?
Good, very good. It's been a good weekend.
This has been an awesome
Yeah. We all did the same thing this
we
weekend.
Did. Ironically. not all of us together, but we all did the same thing. A third of us did together. Well, two-thirds of us did.
It just didn't work out as
not at the same
well,
time.
Yeah,
in sync as, I mean,
it wasn't as in sync, but it wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Well, you guys are all welcome. I let you know about all the cool things that are going on here.
I had planned that months before.
On that Saturday,
That Saturday, but I had planned on going that months before you had orchestrated it. It happened to serendipity, coincidentally, fallen on the same day at the same time.
So. I thought it was funny
that John planning on going, or was he did go because of
John,
us?
John went because of you guys.
Okay, that's
yeah.
Right.
In fact,
I wonder.
We didn't. I feel a little bad because I didn't know he wanted to go. My cousin Beth had set this up. Maybe we should start from the beginning. Just leave the.
We went down to Wichita for Star Wars, Where Science Meets Imagination.
Oh, okay. I was going to turn around and show you my bag. It's on my shirt.
It's a traveling Star Wars display, and this is the first time it's ever been to Kansas or our area, not even in Kansas City. So we all made the trek down to Wichita, which is about 2.5 hours away.
Ironically, I read it's going to Kansas City next.
Oh, is it?
That's what I've seen on the internet, so...
I'll go again.
I wouldn't go again.
I don't know.
It was good. It was fantastic.
I'd go again.
I don't need to.
I
read everything. I spent a lot of time in that place and read everything. Anyway, keep going, Keith.
So we went down there, and John Boy, joined us for that activity since he lives in Wichita.
Yeah, actually, he lives in Haven. Is about 20 minutes from Wichita.
Okay.
Yeah, so
close enough.
He lives in the area.
Yep.
So we got to meet Zoe,
his daughter,
and his sister. I'm blanking on her name.
If I can remember her name, I'll be accomplished. And I don't, I'm
sadly,
sorry.
I can't remember her name either. Sorry, John's sister.
And we met John's sister. And quasi his wife shortly.
Yeah, Jenny. She came and picked up Zoe.
At the theater, yeah. Yep. And they went and saw Ice Age.
Oh, they did.
Because we went and saw The Dark Knight Rises at the Warren IMAX.
The world famous Warren IMAX.
Which, and Zoe's only six?
That sounds
five,
right.
Maybe. And very, very, very much too young for...
Very much
But she was very cute in her Who Let the Dogs Out shirt.
And terrified of me for some reason.
All of us.
So, and then
talk or...
another friend of ours, actually, his family went down based on the fact that you guys were going yesterday as well.
Well, we had discussed going to see Dark Knight Rises in IMAX because so much of it was shot in IMAX. And we had gone to see Hunger Games in Kansas City.
Which, by the way, I saw it not in IMAX, and you can't tell.
Oh, no, but it was still an amazing spectacle to behold.
Ours was longer.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
IMAX presentation is, I don't know how much longer, but it's longer.
I'll be darned. You get an extra scene?
Probably.
Because it's just that much more awesome.
Doesn't add that much, but that's cool. That's neat.
I just want you eating your heart out.
Well, what happened was I had coordinated a plan to go down with my family, some of my family. My cousin, Beth, she had invited us, me and my other cousin, David. David and I are huge Star Wars fans. And so she had asked to coordinate a time to go down and go through this Star Wars exhibit with them. And it just happened that this was the weekend that we had free and coordinated that. Now, I apologize to John because I didn't realize he was a fan, and I didn't mean to exclude him from our plans. It wasn't until he was there with you guys. I knew that he was going to the Dark Knight because I think one of you guys had told me he had mentioned that he was going to do that.
Yeah.
I didn't realize he was going to do the Star Wars thing as well.
I think he was kind of up in the air. I know he he mentioned during Friday Night Who that he wasn't sure if they were going to make it to Star Wars and if he was going to bring Zoe. I don't think he fully knew his plans until the morning. It just came together. Okay, just good. Great.
Because, I mean, we certainly would have invited
him. Zoe hasn't seen any of them either. He told me. So.
Yeah, we certainly would have invited him had we known that he was
I feel a little bad because being the kind of event coordinator and having, you know, Mel and Billy with me and then a friend of mine, Brent, from Sprint came down and then obviously Keith and Blake and Sarah and then running into John Boy, running into you, running into Dave and his family and having all these balls kind of in the air with different peripheral groups of people, I kind of felt like I didn't really get to spend much time with John at all.
I
felt bad because it was like, okay, well, we're going to go over here. We'll see you later. And then, you know, we'd bump into him again in another part of the exhibit. Oh, that's cool. Okay, I'll see you later. And then, you know, so I felt bad that it wasn't more of a coordinated effort, but it was a good time. We had a lot of fun.
I barely saw you guys because I got there about maybe an hour later than you guys did. Because
really?
We went for lunch and everything. Yeah, we didn't get over there until about noon, maybe 12:30.
We got there after that.
Yeah, we got there
did?
Yeah.
Well, then you guys blew through that exhibit a lot faster than we did. Well, I take that back. Because we actually did. Did you guys do any of the rest of the?
We blew through the.
You
rest
blew through
of it.
The rest
we
of it. See, we did. We took our time because we had the kids with
the
us. Yeah, and they did the castle, and they did all of the stuff.
That was
in
full
the
of screaming.
We walked through the castle. I was like, wow.
It was like, hey, look, a castle. Okay, we're walking.
If I were 20 years younger, I would love that.
It's a very very cool kids thing.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, I think to me, of the Discovery Center part or the Exploration Center part, that's always there. That was the coolest thing.
Well, it's
in the
three
sense
stories.
That my kids enjoyed that. The other things, there were neat
the
things.
The wind wall.
The wind
that
wall was
my
neat.
Favorite.
Yeah,
that was so cool.
Anyway.
The little
The
little
you
blew
fan
the fans
on it.
And the thing.
I'm going to put one of those in my house.
Did you guys go into the Millennium Falcon show?
We didn't.
Based on Dave's reply, which David sent a text early, because they've got down there first thing as soon as it opened, because he wanted to make sure that they got in for that, because it said limited tickets.
I got there when he did.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so we got there at the
same
time.
Now, did you do it? Did you do that?
I didn't, and I'll tell you why. Because, my cousin's boyfriend, who was with us as well, he went over to find... No, it was David. It was my cousin. He went over to find out what was going on. Because we didn't know what that was. We didn't know that was part of the Star Wars thing because it was in another room.
Yeah, well, it was in the other part of it.
And
it
so we came over. He said, well, I want to go find out what this is. So we went, and he found out that was the Millennium Falcon simulator. There's a short film, and then there's a scene where you actually feel like you're flying in the Millennium Falcon, which would have been kind of cool. Except for he said it only seats 5 people, and it's a 5-minute film. And the line was, you know, wrapped around the backside of it. So at 5 people at a time, there was probably about 100 people in line. We were looking at more than an hour waiting in that line. So we were like,
and it was an additional cost.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
Well, it's only like $3.
It was like
$3.
Which
is not bad.
If there was no line, I'd go up and pay that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was the thing, as Dave said, that they spent 25 minutes in line waiting for it. And then he said it was 4 minutes, and he said, you know, if there's a line, no, it's not worth it. So that was kind of Dave's impression of it. And based on that, we were like, we don't need to pay for that.
Yeah. So
now, if there hadn't been a line, I totally would have gone and ran. I would have run up front, bought a ticket, and run all the way back to the back of the thing. I want to ride the Millennium Falcon.
Right,
but to stand in line to ride it.
No, I thought the same thing. So we passed that. We surpassed that. But
did you guys get to do the planetarium?
We did. We did the planetarium.
We didn't get to do that.
We missed the show.
We missed it by 11 minutes.
Well, if you stuck around, another one.
That was the last one at 3:30.
Yeah.
Oh, you missed the show we were in. So that's what we were in when you guys went out and did Putt-Putt then. Okay, so we were about the same time there. Because when we came back in, I thought you guys had already done Planetarium and were finishing Putt-Putt. That's why I thought you guys had gotten there before us. And so, of course, you didn't.
Yeah.
What did you do for lunch?
What did I do for lunch? Mm-hmm. Went to Dog and Shake.
Guess what we had.
What did you have?
Fazoli's.
Good idea. My family doesn't like Fazoli's. So we went to Dog and Shake. Uh-oh. Yeah.
That's why it was the greatest weekend ever.
I went to Fazoli's and my stomach was feeling weird that morning and I wasn't hungry.
Yeah, what a shame.
I ate some and I did feel a little better afterwards.
Oh,
but Sarah and I shared a meal and it worked out.
See, and I had considered that, but all the people I was with, they weren't fans. So
it was the greatest day ever because it started with Fazoli's, and then there was Star Wars, and there was Batman and IMAX. And it was like, this doesn't get any better.
So, because then you guys went on later that night to the Warren and saw Batman and IMAX.
In fact, we left from Imagination Place to
drove straight over. And it's a good thing we did.
Have you guys waited in line for about an hour?
We got there an hour and a half early. And I wanted to make sure that we were at least an hour early.
We got into the theater a half an hour early.
But
and the line wrapped clear out the building.
An hour and a half beforehand, we were already in line on the other side of the building from where the IMAX was. And people that arrived after us were out the door and in the parking lot. And
that's good.
I mean, it was
insane. There was plenty of seating still. So, and because some of our group showed up later because they had to work. And so they went back to the back of the line, and they were still able to join us for seats. I mean, so it wasn't a big deal.
It's because I held them.
That's true. We did hold them, but we didn't have to hold them for very long.
I did hold seats. I'm not ashamed to admit it, and I used your line on it because I had a guy that wanted to give me some lip. He says, "Hey, are those reserved?" I said, "Yes, they are." And he kind of looked around at this immensely packed, crowded, sold-out IMAX theater, and he goes, "Really?" I looked at him and I said, "Yeah, when you arrive an hour and a half before the film starts, you're allowed to do that. They're at the concession stand." And there was a couple sitting next to me, and they kind of, the guy walked off, and they looked at him, and they looked at me, and she goes, "Maybe we should go to the concession stand. I think he can cover this." And I looked at him and said, "I got this. You got something you need to go do? I'm here."
But it's been my deal. You start, the closer to showtime that you get there, you start to lose rights.
Yes,
as a moviegoer. You start to lose rights. Holly and I went today because we had to work out a sitter. So my parents watched the kids this afternoon. We went this afternoon. And we got there an hour ahead of time because I was afraid. And there was only like 9 people there.
Oh, really?
And so we went in and we of course, the other movie was still on because they've booked this one closed because there's a lot of showings of it.
Oh, yeah.
And so we waited out in the hall. But they had the little like rope anticipating. And we finally, some more people walked. Actually, there was only 5 people when we got there. We were 6 and 7. And then 3 more walked up behind us, and when we saw them come behind us, we decided to move down because we were sitting in the benches in the middle. We decided to move down and actually
get in
the formula line, which the other people didn't. So there was just 2 guys ahead of us then, so we were 4th in line. We're like, "Hey, all right." By the time the movie got over and they cleaned the theater, the line was all the way down that hallway. You know, we were in 14. It was all the way down to where they take the tickets.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And so we were like, "Okay, good thing we got here early." And of course, as we walked in, I said, "We're going to sit." I said, "You know, we come an hour early to sit on the outside seats because I'm an outside seat guy. I've got a small bladder. I have to get up and use the bathroom." I didn't today, but a lot of times I have to get, and my least favorite thing is crawling across people during a movie. Unfortunately, when you're at the end, people crawl across you, but that's a whole other thing. But I like to be able to get up and leave if I have to. However, what happens then is they come in and they do that stupid, "Everybody move to the center, everybody move to the center." And my line has always been, if you give me grief, I got here an hour early in order to sit where I want to, and I'm not moving for anybody because that's what it is. I come an hour and a half. Most people come an hour and a half early to sit in the center. I come an hour and a half early to sit, you know, halfway up on the side because I want to sit not on the outsides like in the old theaters, but in the ones we've got, you know, the end seats. It's my thing. I won that right being the first there.
That's right.
Anyway, so.
You said that, and I thought about it, and I was like, yes.
You lose rights. That is what happens. You start losing rights the closer to film time you get.
So.
And I tell you, when they come in there and they say, "Move over so that everybody can sit together." If you brought 7 people to a movie theater at 5 minutes before opening weekend of a Batman film, you're all sitting away from each other because you're going to go find the individual seats.
You don't deserve it.
Here's part of the problem. And I'd set this up. I coordinated groups with the Klontarf group on the phones and the Facebook group and, you know, trying to get everybody to, "This is what we're doing. If you're interested, let me know." And nobody replied. Nobody did anything. And then kind of sort of people started sending in some RSVP stuff because I was trying to coordinate rides and everything. Mm-hmm. And I had one friend who was... Gene, he was ready. He's all kinds of pumped. He wants to go to the Star Wars thing. He wants to go to dinner. He wants to go to Batman. He's ready, and he's all kinds of hyped. And then I look on Facebook, and he's having a very nice conversation with him, and I'm sorry that you got stuck in the middle of that.
Well, Gene said something, and I was like, I'll go check real quick.
Where Gene's going, "So where do I get my tickets at?" "This is Friday." And we were like, "What? You don't have tickets yet?" "Well, no." Facepalm. What? I mean, this,
fail.
And now, admittedly, Gene's fairly new to Facebook. He's not the most tech-savvy guy out there. But, dude, the opening weekend in IMAX of Batman, and you didn't buy your ticket early?
In a town you don't live in.
Yeah. I mean, what
even if it weren't opening weekend in IMAX... and it was just a town I didn't live in, I would reserve tickets to make sure I wasn't going there for nothing.
So he did. I reserved tickets for a Sunday afternoon show earlier in this week.
Yeah.
And Sunday shows don't typically sell out, but there's always that chance with the opening weekend of Batman.
Well, they did some checking and found out that, of course, our showing was the 6:30 was sold out. The 2-something earlier was sold out. And he was like, well, I'll get tickets for the 10. And I'm like, okay, how is that going to affect your ride? Because initially he was planning on riding down with us. And he's like, do you have tickets? I'm like, yes. we're going. That's why if you look on the Facebook post, it says we're going to the 6:30. Get your ticket now. That was what was posted. And so I felt horrible. He eventually wound up bailing. He just decided, I'll make another trip of it some other time. Yeah, and I felt horrible because he was so high. I mean, he was the guy. Every post on this thing was, when are we going? Are we excited? You know, we're doing that. And, you know, yeah, we're corresponding. We're excited. We're this, that. But he just didn't get his ticket ordered. So then Brent shows up Saturday morning. We're all coordinating. We're getting ready to leave. And I'm looking at Brent going, I feel so bad. Gene couldn't make it. He didn't do this. And then he didn't get his ticket. And I'm thinking, man, how come? What kind of, who would you have to be to not get a ticket? And Brent looks at me and goes, well, I don't have a ticket yet. And I looked at him. I went, "What?" I mean, I had a nervous breakdown. So Brent spent the first hour of the drive down to Wichita on the phone trying to get a hold of the theater. And I have to admit, we poked a little fun at Brent, and I said, "On the bright side, you are just like Arnold Schwarzenegger." And he says, "Why?" And I said, because you thought you could go out on Christmas Eve and get a Turbo Man doll.
So did Brent get a ticket?
He called and got a hold of the office. And, of course, you know, they weren't open. And then they finally, well, we'll call you back.
Because it was too early in the morning.
And, so he finally got the call back. He's like, yeah, do you happen to have any tickets for the IMAX presentation? And we could hear the guy on the phone laughing, going, wait a minute, Bob, this guy wants a ticket to an IMAX Batman. And no, they didn't have any. So what he wound up doing is he bought a 7 o'clock show ticket for a non-IMAX screening. And got there at the theater with the rest of us. So we're in line an hour and a half early for our show. He's in line 2 hours early and was first. He went and sat in the front of the thing at the podium and pulled out his phone and played games for 2 hours. And we just waited for him after the movie ended. I felt so bad that he didn't get to see it for another half hour.
So
yeah. Well, even less, not even that,
because IMAX is longer.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you guys got the longer movie.
So. But yeah, I felt so bad. So lesson for everyone. If you're coordinating any kind of group event, you're going to a movie, and it's an opening weekend, in another city, as Batman,
you're in charge.
Order your tickets early. Okay, enough of that.
I think Sarah got ours like 2 weeks ago.
quickly, was everything
fantastic end to the trilogy?
Not as good as Dark Knight, just as good, if not better, than Batman Begins. And agreed, it's probably the best trilogy ender out there.
I think best encompassed trilogy of any films out there. I didn't like the very, very ending. We won't go into that too much. But a great end to the franchise. Not as good as Dark Knight, but just because it was almost a little too epic for itself. But it was great.
It was
fantastic.
Epic. Yeah, it was very, fantastic. Very epic.
Too grand, but good.
So that was our week, and now I'm going to Colorado.
In about 3 hours, this podcast over with. So let's move on to news. Because there was nothing else.
There really, yeah.
That's all we did.
That's all we did. This
Caitlin
weekend.
And I rode bikes tonight.
I had a lazy Sunday.
There you go.
I'm going to play disc golf in the mountains.
Ooh, fun.
Both places we're staying, Estes Park, Frisco, both have disc golf courses.
Why are you going to Colorado? You want to tell everybody?
Why am I going to Colorado? Uh-huh. Because I like Colorado.
It's vacation, right?
Oh, it's a vacation.
Yeah. You're going
on
holiday.
Spain was booked.
Going on holiday. You're going on holiday.
I'm going on holiday.
People might wonder why you were going to Colorado.
Nothing related to anything else that unfortunately happened in Colorado this week. And you remember Raf?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize Raf and his wife moved to Miami after they left here, and then they moved to Colorado. I didn't realize they moved to Aurora.
Oh.
And Raf was at that movie theater earlier in the day.
Wow.
And they have a little girl now. And Renee had commented. She said, thank God, because if we didn't have the child, we probably would have been at the midnight showing that night.
Wow.
So it was kind of a very much near miss.
We should say our thoughts, prayers, meditations, whatever, good vibes, positive vibes, go out to those people and their family and the victims. And
I just I'm not going to get into that.
Tragedy.
Yeah,
it's just tragedy.
But, no, it has nothing to do with that. Just we've kind of been, you know, peripherally looking at different places to go and try and take a vacation, and this was the week that wound up being available, and Colorado is kind of the outer limit of the day trip that you can plan.
Which they just had.
for us.
That's true, because it's an eight-hour drive from here, 8.5-hour drive from here.
About nine to where we're going.
Okay.
We're making New Orleans a day trip.
Sadly, you're headed into the state that just had a very obviously bad tragedy and just finished burning.
Yeah.
Most of the states
burned. Fire,
yeah, no, it's, so. They've got them all out, but most of the states charred now, so... Anyway, not a good week or not a good few months for Colorado.
Yeah, but so we're gonna go and we're gonna go play some disc golf and have a good time in the mountains.
Cool.
And kind of decompress and relax, and I'm ready.
Well, if you lose a disc in the mountains, it's gone. So take some extras.
Maybe I should buy some.
All right, now let's move on to news.
Moving on to news, really the only big thing that we saw on Friday, Batman opened. But you know what else opened? Friday marks the official opening of the Doctor Who Experience in Cardiff Bay. And they had a special ceremony and monsters and all kinds of stuff. And apparently there's a full review online through the Doctor Who News.net group, which we won't go into. But obviously we're excited. And now Cardiff is on our list of vacation paradise spots that we're going to have to go to at some point.
That's right, before that silly thing closes.
But that's it as far as news goes. There really hasn't been much else.
All right. If there has, somebody will point it out to us.
Oh, I'm sure.
Let's move on to feedback.
Doctor Who's still not on.
we still don't have a date.
We still don't have an official date, which is...
Yeah, I'm sure it's coming soon. I bet in the next 2 weeks
it's got to be
know.
The 25th. But
I bet in the next 2 weeks we know for certain.
I bet by the 1st of August.
The bee will let us know.
I'm thinking by the end of August we'll know.
Well, yeah, I should hope. I should hope. Well, watch BBC America, because they usually spill the beans before the BBC.
You know, that's true. Honestly, because I posted schedule news on the website last night, and I was looking on the BBC site, and I didn't even think about that. You're right. I should have been checking BBC America. They probably have it posted.
That's what you do. That's what they did last year. All right. Well, let's move on to feedback while Sean double checks.
First up, Chrissy.
Hi, Chrissy.
Her email subject is...
It's not what I wrote down in my notes, but okay.
That's what I said.
No,
you
said
show notes.
You said Phil first and then Chrissy.
Do you remember what I said?
Don't ask Sean. He had a stroke once. Sorry. Too soon?
No, and accurate. Where
All
am
right.
I?
First up is Chrissy.
Chrissy. And the subject of her email is, don't you remember? We built this forbidden city. Dear Vortex Boys.
Oh, hang on. Before you launch into that. You missed out.
I was there for half.
You fell asleep. You went to bed. Whatever
I particularly
you did.
Went to bed. I didn't fall asleep in the middle. I apologize to the Friday Night Who crowd. I stayed
didn't
home.
Didn't even
to,
say goodnight.
I knew I was getting up early on Saturday morning. And traveling to Wichita, which you guys did too, but I think you guys left a little later than I did. And I knew I was leaving. So what I did is I thought, you know what, I wasn't going to watch it all. I was just going to do it this weekend. And I was sitting there, and I was still awake, and I thought, maybe I'll watch a little bit of this with the guys. So I logged on, and I you know, said my highs and chatted for a while. And then I just sat there, and after the first two episodes, I was like, this isn't the most exciting of stories. It's not going to really keep me awake for another hour. So I thought, I'll just go to bed. So I just kind of snuck off.
Oh,
went to bed.
If you look, check your email box, we totally made fun of you.
Oh, did you? I looked at the Twitter stream the next day, and it said, sweet dreams, Glenn. Good night.
Okay. Yeah, about 30 minutes after we'd heard the last tweet from you, I sent out, Vortex Glenn is now asleep.
Yeah, that was the first one.
You know,
that was
midway
first
through
one,
so. Episode 3, I think.
Yeah. So, no, I didn't fall asleep during it. I purposefully turned it off and went to bed and then finished watching the rest of it today.
What kind of Whovian are you purposely turning it off and going to bed?
I have responsibilities.
It was so much fun. We laughed so hard when we got into the fourth part of that thing.
Well, that's the thing is, it was a very, obviously we'll do the review, but I could tell that it was a Friday Night Who ripe episode.
Oh, yes.
Is what it was because, yeah. Well, we'll talk about it later.
We'll talk about it.
Anyway.
Okay, I'm sorry.
So,
go ahead, Chrissy.
Chrissy says, Dear Vortex Boys, so I'm sitting here listening to the podcast and you three start your end of the podcast goodnight everyone thing. I glance at my iTunes And I see there are still 3 minutes left. I'm wondering, are you going to play your theme tune for 3 minutes straight? And then Sean does his little Casey Kasem intro. And it's all downhill from there. I guess it's my fault, too, since I brought it up. If yes, I don't want my pigtails pulled, I shouldn't poke the bear, or something like that.
They made me do it, Chrissy. They twisted my arm.
Anyway, in answer to Sean's question, yes, Back to the Future 3 was partially filmed in Monument Valley near Moab, Utah.
I think it's Moab.
Moab? That sounds worse to me. That sounds less right to me than Moab. But okay. Moab, Utah, which is where The Impossible Astronaut and Day of the Moon were filmed also. Or as well. Sadly, the drive-in theater with the Indians where Marty drives the DeLorean back to 1885 was just a set they built for filming and was taken down later.
Oh, that's too bad.
This was extremely disappointing to me as a kid because whenever I'd go down to southern Utah, I'd look for the drive-in theater with the Indians and I never found it.
I went to Wichita looking for that donut shop and Mars Attacks. It's not there.
Reviews! Death to the Daleks. Alternately titled, The Daleks and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. This was quite the change from the typical Dalek stories. Even more impressive that Terry Nation wrote it, and it was so different from what he'd written in the past. The Daleks aren't out for conquest or revenge when the Doctor meets up with them. They're just one of many groups who'd run into some bad luck. Their power's gone, their weapons don't work. They have to work with the Doctor and the people from the Marine Space Corps. They probably would rather have shoved iron pikes into their eye stalks. For once, the Daleks aren't the main focus in a Dalek story. Along with the Marine Space Corps, there are also the Exelons to contend with, both the High Priests and the Outcasts that look like skeletal Sontarans. But I did like the puzzles the Doctor had to solve there toward the end. But the best part was the Daleks having to solve them as well. It was kind of nice that they had to do something more complex than scream, exterminate, and shoot things, even though that's more or less how they solved the checkerboard hopscotch puzzle. I actually got a nice laugh out of that one. Oh, an effect. And the effect.
You weren't the only one. We died. The thing, and Keith got a little excited. He's like, ooh, ooh, because he knew this was coming, right? And the thing rolls through, it gets electrocuted, and we're like, haha, that was awesome. And the second dialogue goes, blam, 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 shoots the floor up.
At least now I know where they got the inspiration for Revenge of the Cybermen bits. There was the entire Electric Four section in that one.
And the Five Doctors.
I remember it, too. Five Doctors. I didn't remember.
Wasn't it Revenge of the Cybermen and the Cybermen couldn't get through?
I think you're thinking Five Doctors.
Five Doctors.
Because he's playing hopscotch and the answer is easy as pie. And then the Cybermen come in led by the Master.
Okay, maybe that is what I'm thinking of. I don't know why I thought it was Revenge.
I don't know either.
It couldn't possibly be Five
totally
Doctors.
Did not remember
it's got
it,
Cybermen
Revenge
in
Cybermen.
It, therefore it must have Cybermen in the title.
But it was definitely in the Five Doctors.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Regardless, it was kind of cool to see where that inspiration came from. Yeah. The apocalypse element. I had some technical issues with this story, so I'm not entirely sure what to say about it. I could barely hear some of the characters' voices, so I'd turn up the volume. But then another character would start talking loud, or the Daleks would start shooting, and I'd have to turn it back down again. There were some parts I just couldn't hear very well, so I missed some key moments, like when the Doctor changed all the doors on Gallifrey to only be opened with Evelyn's retina scan, or when someone said Romana had been a slave to the Daleks for 20 years. Anyway, that's just technical stuff, but it got in the way of me understanding and enjoying the story. However, did anyone else feel like Evelyn was kind of shoved aside in the story?
A little bit.
Yes.
Still a little bit. Moments, but yeah.
Yes, I know they're back on Gallifrey, and it's the return of Romana, and there are bigger things to focus on, but
yeah,
I kind of felt bad for Evelyn because of that.
They actually let her into the Citadel, so...
Well, only the second human?
Yeah.
That's all she said about Apocalypse Element. So.
Oh, okay. No, can I stop you there
yes.
then? Did anybody else have the audio problems?
I did not.
I did.
I did.
Did you?
Yeah.
Maybe because I was listening to the earbuds.
Not as bad as her.
Not as bad as that. Specifically, the gain on the Daleks seemed to be really out of
yes.
whack when there were multiple Daleks
yes.
and they all started screaming at
They're
the same time.
They're always loud for me.
And every time a gun went off
or explosion. Every time a gun or explosion
yes,
went off.
Yes, it was way, way, way overmodulated. Or not overmodulated. Just, yeah, I continually were up and down my audio.
Same problem.
Yeah. Now I fortunately didn't miss any lines, but I just yeah I was running the volume knob every time the Daleks would come on scene because they were either screaming or shooting.
I want to say I went to the volume knob for like the action bits just because action's always louder than dialogue.
See, I never have that problem with anything any other audio play. The action's just as good. I mean, just as even
as the level.
Yeah, as the
so maybe others. I did. I just didn't notice it.
So,
as
yeah,
much.
Chrissy, I totally had the same problem. I didn't end up missing any dialogue, but I had the same problem when I was riding the volume switch.
She finishes out her feedback with the mutant phase. At last, a fifth Dr. Biggs finished story that actually is pretty good. It seems like Big Finish writers have gotten their timey-wimey plot lines worked out. At least much better from the last fifth Doctor story you reviewed.
Amen.
I do like the Doctor's explanation at the end that paradoxes don't make sense because they're paradoxes. When I start thinking about the ins and outs and whys and wherefores of the timeline and can't get my head wrapped around it, that's an explanation I can accept. Granted, there's a lot you can put up with from a story involving time travel. Also, Nyssa in this story is just wonderful. I love how she and the Doctor just bounce off each other and their scientific explanations, and she even gives the Doctor pause when he thinks that she's been repairing the time circuits. But she's actually working on the audio alert system so they know when they're about to crash into something. My favorite thing about Nyssa is that she really tries to understand the Doctor's explanation, where other companions just smile and nod at the Doctor's ramblings. The pair of them are really on equal footing here, and that's something that I love about these two. And we don't have to hear some blather about mathematically excellence every other minute to know that Nyssa can hold her own intellectually with the Doctor.
Right.
Oh, and let me welcome you to the North America division of the People Who Live Places Where the Doctor Has Landed Club. Even if the Kansas sheriff that Nyssa and the Doctor found sounded more like he was from Alabama, we are a small but proud contingency.
Yeah, ever so briefly.
Which that was a great thrill for me, honestly. Just
really,
oh.
The fact that they landed in Kansas.
I didn't. That was the last.
I squeed. Not
that,
really?
That was the last thing I ever expected for Doctor Who to ever, ever, ever step its foot in Kansas.
Huh.
And
it was interesting.
It was
a nice
cool.
name drop, but I didn't get as excited over it. I should have.
On this story, there's something else I got a bit more excited about, but we'll get into that later.
Yeah, okay.
I would agree with Chrissy that sometimes the timey-wimey plot lines are confusing. Like, going into this story thinking, okay, this is before the Apocalypse Elements, and before the Eighth Doctor adventure I've heard, and before the Seventh Doctor Dalek story we've reviewed, but for the Daleks, it's later.
Yeah,
it's so hard to wrap your brain around that
right.
For the Doctor, it's before, but for the Daleks, it's after.
We're actually, Sean, fortunately, has done this well, which they did in the line as well, but so it's not hard to do. Sorry, Sean, give you too much credit. Anyway, but what we're doing a River Song thing where we're...
It's from the Dalek point
we're,
of view.
Yeah, but we're actually on the Dalek's point of view. It was the progression of... And it clearly is leading us up to events in... Dalek Empire. If you guys don't see that, I mean, it feels like a setup, though, to me. It feels like we're establishing some little things in the Doctor's universe that are going to play in later in Dalek Empire. Not necessarily these are grand plots that are being set up, but you really feel
little,
like they're building to
nuggets.
Something.
Yeah.
Setting up the, basically the new galaxy. Where they set up the having the genocide machine. I mean, it just all feels like power grabs for the Daleks to set up their big war is what it feels
yeah.
like.
Yeah, it does. Well, that's it for Chrissy's feedback.
All right.
Up next, Dr. Phil sent in some audio.
Let's take a listen.
Hey, Dr. Phil reporting in from Newark, Delaware. Just wanting to say a few words on the apocalypse element before you guys embark on your review of it. A couple things that are really neat, in addition to the fact that we have Lala Ward reprising her role of Romana 2, I love Evelyn's performance in the story. There's a few little interesting tidbits to look out for. When the story moves to Gallifrey, ooh, spoilers, that when you listen to any time a door opens, it is a treated version of Dick Mills' sound effects for the television version of Hitchhiker's Guide from the early 80s. So keep an ear out for that. Also, when the temporal projections over Gallifrey, I should say when they're removed, you have the same sound effect, also again treated a bit with some other processing and such, but you can tell it's the sound of the Bird of Prey decloaking from Star Trek III. And that one's a little more subtle, but that is in episode, I believe, 3, near the beginning. So keep an ear out for that. And I think it's interesting about the music that Nick Briggs did for the Apocalypse element, because I was giving it a lot of thought, because this is one of the first Big Finish discs I got, given as a gift, probably in the early 2000s. So let's just say it's gotten a lot of listening. That the score to it has a lot in common, kind of timbre-wise and such, with Malcolm Clark's score to Resurrection of the Daleks. And you might want to have a listen or a view of that episode just to compare. So anyway, keep up the great work, guys. Sorry, I'm just kind of getting in a quick bit of feedback before our Gamma Society Conclave gets going today. So anyway, you guys take care. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
All right.
Thanks,
thank
as
you,
always,
Phil.
Dr. Phil.
Yeah, absolutely. And,
Sean?
Yeah, that guy. Sean.
Hi, how you doing? No,
the buzz from the phone
threw me off. Do we need to go back and reintroduce ourselves?
The buzz from the phone threw me off for a second. For a minute, I was like, do I check and see if that's my phone? And then I saw you grabbing yours, and my whole brain just went. Sean pointed out, or mentioned when we were listening to that off mic, that he recognized the decloaking of the Bird of Prey.
The Bird of Prey.
Okay. Yeah,
that's a really horrible impression of a Bird of Prey decloaking, but I did pick up that one. I didn't recognize the modulated doors.
Sadly, I noticed the doors. I noticed
the doors being an interesting sound. I wouldn't have, until he said it, I would not have keyed into the fact that they were the same sound as the Hitchhiker's Guide television series. So,
I thought the doors sounded familiar, but I didn't know what from. I figured it was doors from previous Who stories on Gallifrey. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize they were Hitchhikers. Because I've never watched the show.
Thanks for pointing it out, Phil. That
definitely.
It was interesting stuff.
And good luck with your whatever that is.
Whatever reason you're not in Illinois.
You're in Newark. There's something going on. I assume it's musical related. Good luck with that.
Well, it's probably over by now, so hopefully it went well. Wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
Yes.
All right. Shall we move on to our review of these three stories?
Yes.
This is our Dalek.
Fifth Dalek Archive.
Archive number 5.
Dalek Archive number 5.
There's a lot of Daleks.
We should get Billy D to record that.
Dalek Archive. I can't say. I can't talk tonight.
It's Dalek Archive number 5.
There you go. Thanks, Billy D.
Some suave Billy D.
Billy D. Sorry.
Death to the Daleks. A power failure in the TARDIS draws it off course, and the Doctor and Sarah Jane Smith end up stranded on the bleak planet of Exelon. They soon meet members of an Earth expedition on a similar situation. The humans are searching for a rare mineral, but first they must find out what is draining their power and avoid what's inside another grounded spaceship. The Doctor's oldest enemies, the Daleks.
Dun, dun, dun!
Really?
Oh, I love this one.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Have you seen this one before?
Yes.
You had. Okay.
I had seen it before and owned the book. I actually owned the Target novelization of this one, and I owned it on VHS, and now I own it on DVD.
This was one of the ones that my library had, and I think if I remember, I had like a Dalek blowing up on the front cover or something.
There's always been whatever version of this that's ever been released.
Oh my gosh, I didn't notice that.
It's a slightly different explosion, but it's always featured a Dalek blowing up on the cover.
So I totally remember. I don't think I ever checked it out.
Several Daleks in this story.
They do. I never checked it out though. So. This was my first viewing of this. I hadn't seen this one.
Really?
Yeah, hadn't seen this.
Shut up, Keith.
There's a handful of them out there, Sean, and every once in a while we hit them.
It seems to be about being all excited to buy it. I thought for sure you had seen that.
Just because it's a Dalek story. I love the Daleks, good or bad.
Despite the fact that this humbles the Daleks so much.
I have seen Day, but I had never seen
this. I don't know if I've seen Day.
I had forgotten that this would have been Sarah Jane's first encounter with the Daleks.
And this is Third Doctor's last encounter, because two stories later he regenerates. Yep.
Oh, that's right.
So I want to start with Glenn. What did you think? So your first viewing. We don't get to do Glenn's
first viewing. We really don't. It's my first viewing. Not the best Dalek story out there.
We're disinterested in Glenn's opinion. Keith, what did you think?
It's not a Dalek story. That's the thing.
I love the Doctor in this. I love Sarah Jane in this. I felt that the relationship has come along here. They're working together very well. They've got this great rapport together. It's fantastic. I think where this falls down, the human crew that they come across, the Earth crew that they come across, really an interesting dynamic there. I like the characters that they develop there, what they're doing here, why they're here, what's going on. I love that. I like the old guy that's ends up becoming the leader because the one guy's
the Scots
has been injured so badly. So I like that team,
and then steals it,
and then the Daleks come rolling out. The Scourge of the Galaxy. And they come out and they do their little egg beater things and go. And suddenly I realized, without a gun, the Daleks stink.
They're useless. They can't even sucker anybody to death.
At that point I was like, wow, I don't know if I like the Daleks anymore. No, really. It's just
victory!
They were so. And they kept getting blown up. And they kept. I mean, things kept happening to them. They weren't even the best looking Daleks. The tops were wobbly. I
don't see why this is called Death of the Daleks.
This is a Terry Nation story.
They killed a bunch of them,
I guess.
That's what's bizarre about this. Anyway.
Honestly, that's one of the things I liked about this, was it's so humbling for the Daleks.
But I can get over all of the bad things about the Daleks. With the exception of the, every time a Dalek comes on the screen, do we really have to get
the musical score?
Like the Daleks were the comedic relief or something.
They almost were.
But they're not supposed to be, even if they come across that way. What was the deal with that music?
Kerry Blyton and the London Symphonic Orchestra. He's a British composer and writer.
It was some oboe.
Are you ready for
every
this?
Time.
If you don't know who Kerry Blyton is, he's a British composer best known for his song Bananas in Pajamas.
Bananas in pajamas, we're coming down the stairs.
He also did the music for Doctor Who and the Silurians.
See, but it wasn't bad. Now.
And Revenge of the Cybermen.
That was the one that had all the...
That's the one we thought it was phones constantly.
Yeah,
someone answered the phone. At least it wasn't clownish.
That's what it was. It was like circus elephants or something when the Daleks would roll in, and you knew when they were coming because even before you saw them, the music started.
I did not like the music.
Horrible. The music was absolutely horrible.
The music did not fit the serial at all.
It's not a horrible. It's not horrible. The root, I think, is what they called it. Was something less to be desired. I mean, I like the fact that the city, it looked like one from the Crow Toss the way before.
Let's recycle some plot.
Which I think it's funny that 2 weeks in a row
they get the same.
The resolution is that's it. That's it.
That's the one. That's the book.
That's the one. Yeah. 2 weeks in a row, though, the resolution of the story we're watching is the city or the spaceship melting.
I wonder if they had a lot.
Do we get the route twice? We get the melting cities.
I wonder if that played into it with Two Entertain's decision to release these two
together.
Maybe so.
Maybe they thought, hey, you know what? I'll bet some astute podcasters will point out that the same root and the same melting effect is used in both of these stories. We should release them together on DVD.
Could be the tie together. I like the fact that this city is essentially become a entity of its own. I like the fact that you've got the two divided groups. I can't remember what was the name of the species that's on the planet.
The Exilians.
You've got the one group that basically worship the city because, well, they fear it, but it's become a god to them.
Yes.
And then you've got the others that recognize that the city is just evil, and they're just set to destroy it. I love that. What a great problem. Yes, I think it's a trope that's happened before. I don't have any examples. But, it's a borrowed idea, I think.
Rivaling factions against one god.
Right. Yeah. Borrowed idea, though. And so, but I like
borrowed
that. I thought it was cool.
Even.
It was very neat. I like the fact that the Daleks come up with the scheme of blowing up the beacon in order to get off the planet.
In typical Dalek fashion.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Just blow
the
it
doctor's
up.
Gonna, how do we get it? Let's go explore the city and see what we can find out. Okay, what are the Daleks going to do? Blow it up.
The other thing that this thing... I like the idea of the doctor and what's the one guy's name? The one first creepy guy that they shows across.
First creepy guy.
He was creepy looking. The Exilian.
Bilal? Goddle.
What was it? Say it again. Say it the second time.
Throws it up here.
Goddle?
I think
Bilal?
That. No, it's the B. It's the B one.
Bilal,
I think, was
Bilal.
The one that went with the doctor into the city, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I think.
Oh, the renegade.
Yeah.
Okay.
The one that goes into the city. Okay, they go in. I love the idea of going to the heart of this thing to shut it down, essentially shut the city down. That's the doctor's plan. I like the idea of a labyrinth of puzzles in order to get to the center and trials and tribulations. I love that idea. A map that my 8th grade daughter just finished on her kids.
8th grade or 8-year-old?
8-year-old. I say 8th grade?
Eighth
sorry,
grade
my
4th
grade daughter.
Like, wait,
my
4th
grade daughter just finished on the back of her kids' meal mat at Steak and Shake tonight. Is on the wall of this thing.
But how are the Daleks going to do that with
well,
their plunger?
Well, that's what makes it even worse is they don't show us the Daleks doing it, because how did they do it with their big old
plunger? We joked about it on Friday Night News. Like, what's going to happen when they get in there? We'll get a cut scene of that door opening and they'll roll into the next chamber.
So... Okay, that's fine. The what was the second one that they had to do? That wasn't the floor. It was the...
Well, the floor was first.
No.
The first one was tracing
the letter.
First
the
one was
on
to get in outside, yes.
Then there was the map.
Which, one of these things is not like the other. Okay, come on. If you look at those symbols, it was pretty clear which symbol wasn't like the other ones.
I would have pushed it. I would have traced it.
Well, no, okay. But it was third grade logic puzzles.
A lot of this was.
What was the third room?
I think the third one was...
That wasn't the one where he tried to kill him, was it? No, that was the fourth.
I think the third one was the floor.
I want to say it was.
Maybe it was the floor then. Okay, so
I
want to
say there were only four rooms, weren't there?
And worst cliffhanger ever.
Don't touch the floor.
No, it wasn't even that. It was like... Wait, stop! I was like, what the heck? We don't even know what the impending danger was. At least leave us with some anticipation that the doctor's in peril or something. No, wait, stop! What the hell? So that was terrible. Why did it? Who decided that was a good idea? I wish somebody would have stepped forward and a little bolt would have flew down or something.
That
would
have been something.
Yeah, absolutely. Give me a real cliffhanger. All right, so... So the floor, cool idea, I like it. I have seen it before in the Mind Doctors. Didn't realize that I'd reversed where the inspiration had come from, but...
You viewed it like me.
Yeah. So, but the cool, that was cool. I like the idea of taking the sonic screwdriver and figuring out where kind of the... Which, that's not really a puzzle if you're using a cheat to me, but okay. There needed to be some sort of logic thing. It works in the Five Doctors because it's the pi configuration. It's
right.
The master figures out that you use pi in order to...
And that's a legit puzzle.
Across, yeah, it's a legit puzzle. But using your sonic screwdriver to find the parts that aren't buzzing, essentially, don't have electric current, that's cheating. But I'm okay with that. It was fine. And I thought the same thing. I thought, well, when the Daleks aren't even going to have to be able to figure that, they're just going to roll right across that. They won't even see it. And then the one goes across. And then the second one goes. Pew, pew, pew. Shoots a four. Wow, well, that's totally Dalek right there.
Which, and the
then
fact
he
that
rolls across, the, and the other ones, yeah, no, the suit absorbed all that. It was fine. The outer casing was fine.
They both could have rolled through it. Yeah. And the fact that the Daleks were able to retrofit their guns to actual projectiles.
That was cool. I like that.
I
was
that
fine
aspect.
With that.
That was pretty cool. That,
very clever. Very clever. I love that. All right, so, and that was the other thing, as somebody brought up on Friday night, who, if there's no power on this,
how are they even moving?
How are
they even alive?
Yeah, so
it's like there's a Cyberman lands, power is taken out of everything.
They fixed that, though. You did hear the answer to that.
I don't remember.
I think it's the doctor, says that they move by
psychonetic
energy or something like that. So basically, they're powering them themselves as far as moving. It's just their weapons and things like that are powered by.
Which, quite honestly, something needed to have been said about that a long time
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, well,
because we establish in the Daleks.
I get the impression
that it's the floor that they've got. You know,
the floor
gives them
the energy
because it's.
And then when they invade
like
Earth, they have created the portable dishes on their back
right.
that gives them the.
But then after that, the whole issue
right.
just kind of dropped.
Now,
well,
we don't know that it hasn't been addressed in the missing episodes.
Well, I suppose that's
However,
true.
I have listened to Power of the Daleks, and it's not addressed in there. So, and in fact, they have to, if I remember right, they have to be repowered in order to be. Yeah, they require that. That's actually contradictory.
To be charged.
They do. They require
they have to be
power.
Plugged in.
Well, they do. In fact, it's called. That's why it's Power of the Daleks, because this group that comes across this ship. Get into the review of this. I didn't want to do this, but they come across a ship. They have to end up powering the Daleks back up because they don't know what they are, what's going on, and the Daleks are actually used. It's kind of almost a victory of the Daleks thing where there's this ruse of we're going to be your servants, we're going to help you because you've helped us, given us power. The Doctor recognizes what they really are. Anyway, so
gotcha.
In fact, I think they borrowed a lot of that idea from Power of the Daleks. Now that I've heard that. Anyway, so that being said, that actually fixed it for me by saying that one line of how they were powered
yeah.
was okay. But then we get into the next two, and I do like the one where it causes the one guy, what do we call him, Bala. He turns on the Doctor, and the Doctor has to, you know, convince him that it's just a mind trick or whatever. And then the third one, the weird psychedelic route, which I figured out that all of the Doctor's era was just somebody liked to do the really cool flashy lights, psychedelic looks, because we get that in the Axons, we get that in the, I think Carnival Monsters has a scene like that. Maybe it wasn't Carnival, something else. Anyway,
something else.
There was another one that we've reviewed that does that. So, okay, that was, it was getting more difficult for the Doctor, but they were less puzzly as we went along. And so that was a little discouraging, but getting to the center of the city, disabling City, that was great. I like Sarah Jane's idea Sarah Jane, I loved her in this.
Oh, so good.
She spends a lot of time running and getting captured, and she ends up becoming almost the sacrifice for the one clan to the city.
And that's just the first two episodes.
Yeah, exactly. but I absolutely love the fact
because
that she comes
up. Because
the
doctor doesn't follow his own first rule.
Yeah.
He wanders off.
Right. Well, no, yeah, exactly, which is fine because I like the fact that he trusts Sarah enough to separate her from her later on and tell
yes.
her to go make sure that the Earth people get on the rocket ship as soon as the power is cut to get off the planet. I love that he trusts her enough and realizes that she's competent enough to be able to do something like that. I love the fact that Sarah comes. Is it a Valinian? What were they mining?
They
were collecting. I want to say Valinian, but I don't think that was right.
Perinium.
Perinium. Okay. The fact that they've got to get the perinium on the ship. But they wouldn't recognize that the bags were missing. So she gets the other bag. Has Jill get the other bags so they can fill those with just anything so that they'll end up on the Dalek ship. And the, what was it again? Plenium?
Perinium.
Perinium will end up on the correct ship. I love that. What a good, very, very clever. Very good, Sarah Jane. I love that. So overall, I enjoy the story. It just, the third episode really falls down, and the Daleks, it's just, they're such a disappointment for me in this.
Well,
so, glad I own it because it's a Dalek story, but glad I've seen it, but it definitely doesn't rank up there as high on my Daleks stories list.
This is one of the stories that it didn't have to be Daleks. Could have been anybody that came out of that ship. Any menacing threat could have came out of that ship.
Yes and no, but I'll tell you what it did do, Keith, though, being the Daleks. Is you have that moment of, oh, no, here come the Daleks. And then this is the first time we see the Daleks
powerless,
and reliant on somebody. Not just
which, and that's one of my favorite
turning
things
somebody
about this
into
story.
A slave because there's certain things that they have to have their slaves do, but having to rely on cooperating with another species. It's not all about, you know, total domination at that point. And that was an interesting turn. I
and
appreciate
it's
that idea.
The greatest reveal.
That is a great reveal.
Well, maybe not as good as the one crawling out of the water.
No, the one coming. Chrissy said that. She said best Dalek reveal ever was
them coming off the ship.
Them coming off
it?
The ship. Yeah, that was what she said.
Well, because that was the cliffhanger moment when the ship lands and it's like, well, that's not an Earth ship. And then the door opens and they just start pouring.
Right,
out.
They just start pouring. That's
and
right.
It's like,
and
oh.
She said that, and I thought, yeah, it was. It was one of those oh moments, you know. Although I knew who it was going to be because of the title. But it was just that would have been very cool. That would have been seeing it for the first time. Still does not top that Dalek coming up out of the water.
No, I agree. That's still the best.
At
one.
Least
this is
the second best.
One.
Yeah,
yes, second best.
This is the second best reveal. But
and the fact that the Daleks are so humbled and needing help, I love that aspect to them and that exploration of the character, which we even we even go into in Mutant Phase.
Yes, but they.
Mutant Phase is obviously better written.
It was a perceived humble. It was a fake
it was a perceived,
humble.
Yeah. It was a humble. But it's still, they come out, exterminate, and nothing. They're impotent. Yeah.
All right. What do you guys think? I've talked long enough.
I found this story very enjoyable. It may not be the best Dalek story, but... And it may not
certainly have, different.
It definitely that's what I like about this. It's such a different Dalek story. It's not your standard Dalek story, and that's one of the things I've complained about over and over is that all the Dalek stories are the same thing, just in a different location. This is so different; it makes it much more enjoyable for me.
And I'm convinced that George Lucas got the sand people from these guys.
Oh, I know.
In fact, we kept calling them Tusken Raiders.
There's a lot of stuff.
They'll come back in greater numbers.
Possibly could come from this episode. You look at the we joke about the Tusken Raiders, but that's totally what these guys look like running around in the desert quarry with their rags on. And then the Earth Crew forces. Chrissy pointed it out. The insignia that they're wearing on their emblem looks a lot sideways. Like a Starfleet arrowhead from Star Trek. Yep. It's just sideways.
Although that would
be backwards.
Well, because I think it's a meld because the first Star Trek emblems were just the triangle from the original series,
and then later
this
they had the
is,
circle.
Yeah, this is a triangle side with a circle behind it, and then
that's
later
how they
yes, the circle
issues.
With the. You know. I think putting the circle behind
the circle
well, there's the original. But the circle behind it, I think, would have negated the copyright issues in the first place. But they turned it sideways to be different enough. I think is what they did.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a copyright thing. I think it was a
well, we got to make this
we got to make it look different.
But
enough.
Then the Jill, her insignia is different. Her insignia was not an arrowhead. Her insignia was something else, which looked very much like a Ferengi.
Yeah, I thought
logo.
The same thing. Yep, you're
and
exactly.
Which would have been
which obviously preceded that. Quite
so you
quite
wonder
a bit.
How much everybody else was borrowing from this
so.
Particular story.
And well, and then obviously we've got the electrified floor that shows up later in the
which
fifth,
we,
the five
in
doctors.
In fact, Doctor Who borrows again from.
I don't know. There's just a lot of stuff that...
The more I talk about this, the better it is. Really, it really is. Because I watched through it, and I thought, you know, okay. We had a lot of fun with that first night. And then I got to that fourth episode. But I don't know. I like it better now.
The working title for this story was The Exelons. Huh? I think that would have been a better title.
I think that the...
Because you expect more from
I think the
death
production,
to the Daleks.
I think the production crew... knew that the Daleks were such a popular thing that they had to get the titles in the
well, and at this point,
the name and the title.
I imagine that we've done blah to the Daleks, this to the Daleks, that to the Daleks. What else can we do to the Daleks?
Death to the Daleks. Yeah. Yeah. Well, because we've had because
that'll sound dramatic. And
power, evil, planet, day. It was day. Yeah, day. That we've had all of those up until now.
And even...
and Frontier Space. Oh, wait.
Dalek Master Plan.
Hey, that didn't have Dalek title. Guess what? Didn't have much Daleks in the story either. Yeah, Dalek's Master Plan, Dalek Invasion Earth, the Daleks.
Yeah.
Although the Daleks was never called the Daleks.
Yeah.
But.
Which Dalek Master Plan wouldn't have been either, because Invasion of Earth wasn't, was it?
Invasion of Earth was.
It was.
No, it was not. Dalek's Master Plan, by then they had stopped calling
each episode.
Yeah. Well, they still titled them, but they were, yeah.
The interesting thing is, for me is that, and I touted this beforehand, as I told you guys, it's despite the fact that it's a quintessential Dalek episode. I mean, it really is a paint-by-numbers Dalek episode.
Nah, see, I think I'm with Keith. I don't think it is paint-by-numbers.
But it is.
It's,
we've got the Daleks on a planet. Planet X, we'll call it Planet X.
Involved
in a mining operation.
Oh, that's true.
Taking
yeah.
prisoners and forcing people to do the mining for them.
Right.
The whole reason they came to
Which
the planet
is the whole reason
was...
they get there. We get all of the standard trappings of a Dalek episode. We get the Kreiser exterminate and
those trappings are always going to be there. They're in the next two stories we're going to review, which I don't think are.
Well, yeah.
Traditional.
It's very much everything you've ever seen in a Dalek episode is in here. But yet, they've also taken it and done it and twisted it on its side
yes.
a little bit when they come pouring out of the ship and none of the guns
agreed,
work.
Agreed.
And even
yes.
the Daleks...
I would agree with that.
I mean, the humans are kind of like... What just happened? And you see the guys... and I love it. The guys at the Daleks, who's the Ice Dogs, kind of look at each other like...
What just happened?
I mean, they really are a little lost. And, of course, we're laughing because without that effect, the thing just...
Lame.
It's lame. It doesn't work at all. And then the Doctor strides over. Well, how are you?
Not so high and mighty without your weapons.
Because they've got whisks and plungers now.
Yeah, that's about it. So, you know, I love the city. I love Sarah Jane in this. And this is something that I felt bad tweeting because... Yes, all companions are hot. And here's Sarah Jane in a bathing suit. But because my childhood crush for her was so strong in that girl next door kind of way, I can't look at her that way. I can't look at Sarah Jane in the bathing suit and go, yeah, baby,
that's
you're
okay.
hot.
Jill was hot.
Jill was definitely hot. but I think it's because I respect Sarah Jane so much. That sounds really weird. But she's such a good character. Yes, she's got a couple
of
scream moments in this. She goes into the TARDIS, and I love that. I love everything with the power drain, that the ship loses everything. Oh, go get the flashlight, and then the flashlight dies. Oh, go get the emergency battery, and that dies. How about an oil lamp? Oh, that works. Okay. How do we get out?
What are you going to do, rub it?
Whisper G. okay, how do we get out? Hand crank.
Yeah, that was me.
This was well thought out. I like this.
But that's one of those days that you wish you had the 10th Doctor, the 9th and 10th Doctor's one where it didn't have that interior door.
Yeah, that's true.
You just walk up and open it because it dies at one point in the Cyberman two-parter in the 10th Doctor's era, and did just open the door.
But I like that. I like the fact that they get out into the fog and... She's like, I'm not dressed for this, am I?
Like, so she goes and changes.
Put some clothes on.
And again, smartest companion ever. Any other companion would have just been like,
what
and
are we
then complained about it the entire time.
What are we going to wear to explore the planet? Well, I would recommend shorts and high heels. No, she puts on a jacket and boots. And it's like, you rock.
Oh, and she accessorizes, though. She uses the ensemble she has beneath.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She has a coat.
She puts a coat on her and pulls the scarf out.
She's smart and practical.
For all the stuff that's been made fun of Sarah Jane's wardrobe and the Andy Pounty outfits, it's like, but you know what? It was practical for running through
that's
corridors.
Right.
You can't deny that. I think to your point, Keith, about any menace that came out of the ship, it's yes and no. I think it could have been anything. I like the fact that it's the Daleks because it puts them in
yes,
that different situation of,
that.
Well, now what? And here we are. We've landed. We're powerless. We're going to make an alliance with the humans. We're not happy about it, but we're going to do it. And what's the first thing we do? Let's go put machine guns on our arms. Okay. We can now menace things again.
And that's when it becomes more standard quo Dalek story.
Yeah, I mean, it's just...
is once they get the projectile weapon.
Yes. We have to be able to blow things up in order to be...
Otherwise, we're useless.
We are back to the status quo at that point. But again, that's what makes a Dalek story, too. So I like being able to explore some differences, but I like some of the same as well.
We laughed very hard when the Root catches the poor Tusken Raider on fire. Even though he's standing in the middle of a pond.
Just get under the water.
Just lay down.
But no, it's more dramatic to stand there in the middle of the water on fire.
That was a great effect, though.
It was.
What a wonderful. No, how much they paid that stunt, man.
Well, and then they... Of the Daleks' deaths... They drowned the Dalek, too.
Look at the Dalek deaths that we get. We get one Dalek that's attacked by, and I'm sorry, this is a total, this is a total Ewok moment here. Because this, these guys come at him with sticks and rocks and pound on him.
And bows and arrows.
And he blows up. It's like, wait.
Why? How did that explosion even happen?
What just happened here? Then we get one that we push off a cliff and into the water and it drowns. And then the one in the tunnel that the root blows up. When it's chasing the doctor.
Yeah. And the doctor's and the doctor's commenting on, good shot. Nicely done. Great blow.
Solid hit, sir. Solid hit. So we lose one there. And then we electrify one. Unfortunately, it doesn't blow up, but it was still cool, you know. And then the Daleks are panicking from the antibodies from the city. These lumbering mummy monsters, whatever they are, come out. And the Daleks are like, ah! I don't know. This totally ranks as one of those. Yes, I will freely admit, I look at this one through the rose-colored glasses of nostalgia. Because, again, I owned the book to this. I owned the VHS to this. I watched this story over and over. And I'll be honest, I think this was probably the first Third Doctor story I'd ever seen.
Oh, really?
And it may have been one of the first Doctor Who episodes ever. It ranked very, very early up there for me. And so having that connection...
Well, as close to Tom Baker as it is, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Having that connection to... Oh, and it's in a rock quarry. That's the other thing. Mm-hmm. Which, a lot
and
of
we
sand.
See a nice variation of a rock quarry. The little caverns, or not caverns, but little pathways and stuff.
Well, and I like
a
the
nice
fact
use
that
of a rock quarry instead of a giant open space.
Yeah, I like the fact that it's actually more sand pit than rocks. I thought that was really cool.
And the rocks aren't just background. They're actually
One becomes
props.
A trap.
Not very well done.
Which and Chrissy tweeted, well, how was it possible that what good is that trap? And I had to point out that if he didn't figure it out, he would have been standing underneath it and the rock would have fell on him as opposed to him setting it off and running away.
Right, right.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know. I like the fact that we've got the Doctor in his black velour, you know, velvet outfit.
The worst thing to get against it is sand.
And there's sand everywhere and it's sticking to him and he just, I mean, this is a gritty episode. I like that kind of feel to it. So there's just a lot here that
we get a lot of outdoors shots.
A lot less studio.
Probably about even with studio shots.
Now, there are a couple of interesting notes that I have discovered here. The production code for this is XXX. Doesn't mean anything, but I thought that was
Sean just likes
only
it.
You would notice
only
it.
Me would like that. I was very disappointed when the Doctor's tricking the supercomputer that not once does he order, I reversed the polarity. I kept waiting for it, and it didn't come.
Well, that's one of those misnomers that we've talked about.
This is the last time we see the TARDIS control room until Planet of Evil, which we haven't reviewed yet. So we don't get to see it in the last two adventures with Sarah Jane, which is true because they arrive on Peladon next, and it's just them walking out of the TARDIS, so we don't get any interior TARDIS. And then he regenerates, and the TARDIS is out all the way through all of the Tom Baker stuff.
We don't see it in Robot. We don't see it
first season.
They get the one test flight to the moon, to Nerva, but then they're out of commission because they're bouncing around the timer and everything. So, I mean, the TARDIS console room is out of commission for a good chunk of
and TARDIS
that
ring,
which I didn't realize that it wasn't around.
Yeah.
That's and right. Planet of Evil was well into Sarah Jane's run with Tom Baker, so that surprised me. The other thing I didn't know is that this was... Where did it go? Episode one of this story was
missing. We see the TARDIS. We just don't see the interior.
We don't see the interior. We don't see
them come out and pull
out.
Right.
They disembark from it
Robot.
Frequently.
Right.
Yeah.
Until the... What's the one after Robot?
Arkan Space.
We see the TARDIS in Arkan Space, but we...
Dematerializes.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we're time-ring through the rest of the season.
We time-ring
all the way until...
Revenge of the Cybermen. Yeah. So. Episode one of this story was missing from the BBC archives, which I did not know.
Yeah.
And they did not... What was it? There was one NTSC recording recovered from an overseas television... A low-quality PAL recording was recovered.
Which PAL is what they use overseas.
Yeah.
And then in 1992, they found a better quality 625 PAL recording from a shipment of episodes returned from Dubai. Right. And that kind of flew me, too, because being that this is one of those that I remember and I've watched and I've seen, 92 still seems fairly recent. I mean, maybe not. That's 20 years ago. But yeah, that seems like, wow, 92. So that kind of really threw me with that. But I don't know. Like I said, this is one that I just, it's not a great story. I agree with you guys. All the little criticisms and things that you can harp on. But it's just
enjoyable.
It's an enjoyable watch. It's a lot of fun for me.
All right, let's move on.
Unless anybody else has anything else to say about it.
I think that's a good final word.
All right, then.
The Apocalypse Elements. When the planet Architrex is threatened by a Dalek assault squad, the Sixth Doctor and Evelyn become embroiled in an ever-deepening mystery. What has become of President Romana, missing for 20 years? What lurks in the vast gravity wells of Architrex? What is the secret of the ancient elements the Daleks are synthesizing? And how does Gallifrey feature in their plans? The Doctor finds that his oldest enemies cannot conquer the universe. The Doctor finds that if his oldest enemies cannot conquer the universe, they will watch it go up in flames.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's it?
It was a little weak, yeah.
What?
Oof.
Weak?
Oof. I thought so.
Oh, my gosh.
I really enjoyed this one.
I did, too. I immensely enjoyed this one. Sean, you start this time.
Yeah. Really?
This is the second time I've gotten into this story. And I think part of the problem for me lies in episode one. There's a lot going on.
You feel lost through most of it.
And you do. You feel lost through most of it. And all of the setup that we're given in episode one doesn't really go anywhere. It's all designed just to get to the point where the Daleks can get to Gallifrey and start blowing stuff up. And the war really, you know, kind of kicks in. And then the second half of the story, which is the war, feels very much like, okay, I mean, don't get me wrong, Gallifrey under siege, that's cool. But it's so much Dalek screaming and weapons fire that there's really not much going on there. I felt...
Well, the Daleks don't get very far, either.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first appearance of Romana since she left East Base. Or since she was stranded in East Base, basically. Let the Reaver stay behind. And there's no ceremony. There's no pomp, no circumstance, no...
But she's already back and
she's already
as
back.
President.
She's already president, and she's been missing for 20 years.
So that tells me there's
what?
A story in between
I mean,
there.
Well, I would have thought so, but there isn't. This is the first appearance of Romana since East Base. I mean, I thought for sure... I'm doing this out of order. We missed something when I set up the schedule. And it bugged me. And I looked and looked and looked, and it wasn't there, which is why it's officially on the schedule now. Because I was listening to this is one of the last ones that I'd started listening to and then decided that I was getting so far out I'd never remember them when we came back to review them. I felt really kind of surprised at that. It was like, well, it almost didn't feel like there was a reason to bring Romana back at that point. We do have the return of Vansel, which you had asked me, didn't Vansel show up? And I had to go and look that he was in Sirens of Time. And it wasn't until I read that
which,
I remembered
and
him.
And I remembered Vansel from Zagreus more than Sirens of
Right,
Time.
But of course, you've listened to
Eighth Doctor, so
right.
That's later on.
But just we've already got him coming back. We've got a kind of sort of pseudo-president already
well,
there.
Previous president that's had to take back up the mantle because
right.
Romana's missing.
But, I mean, it just... It felt like
she became
an unnecessary character, really, which is unfortunate because I love Romana. I love Roald Ward's portrayal of Romana.
Other than a reason to rescue somebody.
And I mean,
that's what it came down to.
We've got a really great setup with this planet that's gone missing. The whole planet's disappeared, and Romana's on it. No, we're not going to talk about any of that. The planet showed back up. We've rescued Romana. The planet crashed into this other planet, and off we go to Gallifrey to start the war. Okay. I loved Evelyn. I loved that this is really Evelyn's first, because we skipped. We went to Bloodtide and then
right.
came back to this one knowing that the Dalek segment was going
right.
to be in here.
Right.
And listening to it, I don't feel like we did her a disservice necessarily by skipping this
no,
one and going on,
yeah.
even though most of her stories are kind of chronologically set. But this is really her first alien. All of the rest of her, well, not counting the Silurians, because, again, they're earthbound, but this is her first otherworldly experience, because all the rest of her stories have been, period pieces. Right?
Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, she meets the Silurians, but it's a,
well, that's
it's
later.
A period
that's later.
Piece. Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're right.
This is her first off-world experience.
Well,
isn't
she,
it?
I think, well, because she was in. See, I'm not. I shouldn't have brought this up because I know I'm going to get confused. But she did the Tudor.
I should have brought the book.
You should have brought. Yeah, where's the book? She did the Tudor one. And then Spectre of Lanyon Moore. That's the other one I was missing with Brigadier. But that's, again, I mean, yeah, that was
it's
an alien, but it's Earth-based. So this is really her first time. And what does she get? She gets this conference of time entities. And aren't you an interesting color? And she's so full of great stuff, and it's awesome. And then she kind of gets shoved to the wayside because Ol Romano's back. I was like, oh, well, okay. But then, I don't know, it's like one too many companions. It felt a little weird to me. Now, I liked the fact that as we got on and we get to Gallifrey, and once again the Time Lords in their infinite wisdom, let's run everything optically and put retina scans on every door in the Citadel. Okay, let's carve that guy's eye out and use it. Okay, what do we do now? And so changing it to Evelyn's retina pattern so that she's the only one, she's the only human on Gallifrey at this point. Although we don't know where Leela's at. That was kind of dropped, too. But yeah.
I do. She's there somewhere.
She's there somewhere fighting the Daleks, but we don't get to see it. I don't know.
Yeah.
So
that's who they should have brought in instead of Romana was Leela. That makes more sense.
I'd like to see Leela go up against a Dalek because she didn't get a Dalek story.
That's true.
I mean, I understand she does later in the new Tom Baker Big Finishes
that are coming out.
Yeah. Mm. But
I know she comes back in Big Finish.
Yeah, she's in the Tom Baker.
But
even with a different doctor in Big Finish.
You're skipping ahead. You're not allowed to do that. So anyway, I don't know. I just don't know. There was just something off-putting about it. I thought it was definitely a better written story for Stephen Cole than...
Yes.
That's head and shoulders above the last one that we did. But it just didn't... It still didn't quite gel for me. There were a lot of nice little things that I liked, and I liked them a lot. I loved the fact that they, you know, like I said, that they put her retina pattern in there, and that was an attempt to kind of justify anything you can do to retcon
that.
The human
eye opening the eye of harmony on the TARDIS, you know. In Doctor Who the movie.
I thought that was really cool and very well done. But the Daleks... Okay, once again, we've got... They took over this planet that disappeared. And what do we got? A mining operation. And we're forcing people to mine something. Okay, what is it? An element. What does it do? It sets the universe on fire.
Why?
Okay, now how does that work? I mean, it's very much ultimate super weapon, but we're not going to explain it.
I got the impression, and maybe I was reading more into this, but I got the impression that the Daleks were having to engineer it to do that for them.
Yeah.
Because they had Romana had to build the stabilizer or whatever it was for it as well.
She had to piece it
together
for them.
So it was like a raw element that maybe had to be designed to do that. So I didn't have a problem with that. It's not like this element, if the planet exploded, was going to just continue to catch on fire.
It's just a doomsday weapon. That's kind of what it boils down to.
I was fine with that.
Maybe I was totally wanting for the Daleks. But I was wanting a little more science to it, maybe. I mean, Davros has the reality bomb, which destroys the electron that holds matter. Okay, I gotcha. He killed the Higgs particle and everything went away. But
that's genius.
Little tiny stabbing motions with the knife to kill the Higgs particle. But this is, what does it do? Everything catches on fire.
It burns.
But it keeps burning and burning and burning burning.
Did anybody else kind of picture the Genesis wave from Wrathicon? When they started
admittedly,
describing it.
Yes.
Okay.
But
I'm fine with that because it gave me a visual to go with it, but it just, I don't know, there just wasn't really enough of a hook there for me. And I don't mind Doomsday Weapon. I love Doomsday Weapons, but I wanted a little bit more
from
it. I
love the fact that that they actually detonate the thing and it burns out an
entire
galaxy
that,
and they have to hold it in stasis in order to.
And then they have to, again, team up with the Time Lords to try to stop it.
because in typical Dalek fashion, we didn't think that through too well.
We don't know how to stop it.
it's moving faster than
the Daleks.
Well, they
Daleks,
knew how to stop it.
The Daleks' idea first was to take over Gallifrey so that they had a way to control it. They were going to use their technology in order to control it and hold it in stasis. But
no, and
it all sort of backfired on everybody.
Yeah. I liked the end. I liked the way that, you know, the Dalek lets you know, you know what? We're going to take over that entire galaxy. We're poised to invade, and now there's nobody to stop us over there.
We've got our own galaxy.
That was a huge holy crap moment. Yeah, and that really did elevate a lot of the story.
More than anything, this story felt like the first volley of the Time
War. That's what I thought. That's entirely
more
what I
than
thought.
Genesis. More than anything else we've seen. No. This is the first volley.
Genesis is a skirmish beforehand. This is definitely the first.
This is it.
This is the hey, this I don't like you.
Yeah.
This is the punch in the face.
Yeah. You talked bad about my mama before, but now we're going to punch you in the face.
Yes.
That's exactly what it is.
I was looking, and maybe one of our readers, maybe Phil has, he has, I think, admitted that he hasn't read a lot of the novels as well. I'm hoping that I was hoping Romana's story, maybe the reason why they did what they did in this is that Romana's story from East Space to Presidency has been explored in the novels, and they felt like they didn't want to.
I saw somewhere that there was a story set before this.
See,
that's
for Romana. I hope that they respectfully said, we don't want to really destroy any of the continuity in the novels, and that's why they did it in such a way.
According to the Wiki article, this is the first official appearance of Romana in production since she left the Fourth Doctor and stayed in East Space. Later novels established that she returned to normal space, as well as returning to Gallifrey, where she eventually became president of the High Council.
So I'm entirely fine with that. And reason being is because
later novels. So that indicates that this came first later, and somebody else went and filled in.
Really? Okay.
That's the way
when you
read
that,
this.
It made me think later novels from the Fourth Doctor's era.
Okay. Hold on.
Because you said Adventures, didn't you?
No, later novels established that she returned. So 96, I read that as it happened after.
Yeah, 96 would have been before this.
Came out. This
and
was
2000. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that's better then.
I was giving them the benefit of the doubt based on the fact that I don't know enough about the novels, and I'm just now starting to get into those. And so I was hoping that the reason we didn't get that is exhibition is because I sort of think they didn't explain or maybe give us a fallback to what it was for those people that might not necessarily.
It would have been nice
count.
If the Doctor had had a line of dialogue going, well, when did that happen?
Yeah,
instead
exactly.
of just musing, oh, well, she got out of East Base and now she's
exactly,
president.
Exactly, yeah. Well, so, but I do like the fact that they've respected the fact that there is some continuity that has happened here and we're going to respect that.
Right.
But there should have been a line because at least according to the TARDIS Wikia, the story that deals with all of that, or talks about that, is a Seventh Doctor story.
Well, but again, we've established.
But this is six.
But we
No. Whoa! But Romana says you've changed. Or no, she says you're in the wrong body, and he says right body, wrong order.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
That totally fixes that because I thought. No, because when he said it, I thought, no, that's still the right order. This is six. This would be after four. But now knowing that she's met him then again in a seventh doctor.
So.
Well, yeah, but
she wouldn't know that.
She said new body, so she's thinking maybe this is the next one after seven. He's saying wrong order. Right, right body,
yeah,
wrong order.
But how would he know that? He wouldn't know that.
Well, he's
going off of memory, assuming, because he remembers four and five.
Oh, okay.
So he knows
all
that
right.
he didn't
There's
meet her
that.
After that. This is his first
okay.
time.
That's
so.
Right. This is his
that,
first
that
time.
That will let me. Okay.
And she, yeah, okay.
So, I don't know. My brain hurts.
You know,
River Song.
That is irrelevant. I didn't have a problem with that. I was excited to hear Lala Ward.
I was too.
Being Romana again, and so that was enough for me. I love the fact. I love the way she reacts to. She's dealt with being prisoner for 20 years.
Oh.
Now that's a drop in the hat for Time Lord if you really think
still,
about it.
But that puts enough darkness in her too.
Yeah. I thought that was fantastic. It really, really in fact it grew Romana as a character for me, just knowing she had that past.
Yeah.
And so I really like that. I like the things that she I mean the line that I love from Romana the best was when she's tempted about traveling with the doctor again. She says, to travel again, to open a door and not know what lay on the other side. She's so
yeah.
You can tell she misses that. She misses traveling with the doctor. She misses doing those things. And that was such a wonderful line.
Which we always assume every companion does.
Yes, yes. But you actually get to hear it.
Yes, that's what's great. Was cool. And this would be the first time we would hear a former companion expressing that. Because Sarah expresses that later in New Who, but this is before that. So
I agree with Chrissy that Evelyn is very underused in this. However, I love Evelyn so much. She has the best lines. And the only thing that I felt was a little out of character is when she says, she tells the doctor that she might have Stockbridge syndrome, and he says, you mean Stockholm syndrome. I don't think she would have. I think that was I read somewhere that Stockbridge is actually a reference to something else in Doctor Who that Evelyn wouldn't have known. But Evelyn's, she's what is she?
She's contemporary.
Yeah,
well, contemporary for whatever time
what is
it
she,
was.
She's a what does she do in her?
She's a professor.
Yeah,
history.
So exactly. So why would she not? Why would she mistake?
How would she get Stockholm wrong? Yeah,
wrong.
That's a good point.
That would seem very out of character. That she would know what Stockholm syndrome was.
Well, as soon as she started going there, well, you know, it's like that. And my brain started going, "Oh yeah."
I always have trouble remembering.
I couldn't remember
the
name
too.
Of it either.
See, I knew it right away. And so when she goes,
I knew what she was talking about. I just couldn't.
That was
think
kind
of what
it just.
Called.
It seemed like a dumb thing to say for somebody of her.
Yeah, I wrote that off because I couldn't remember it either.
Okay.
Then he said Stockholm. I was like, oh yeah, that's it.
Yeah,
so,
just if somebody else had said something. It, I would have bought it. But Evelyn, no, I thought she was history, but I couldn't remember for sure. The Doctor really feels very heroic in this one, and very. Sometimes the Sixth Doctor can be a little selfish.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, he was being very selfless. And I liked that.
This is some of the best Sixth Doctor I've heard or
seen. Because
he's
not arrogant and he's not brainy in this. But he still comes across as the Sixth Doctor. And so that was a lot of fun. That was really good elements of this. I was the same way. I did find myself a bit confused from time to time. But I thought they did a really good job. Is just to the point you were getting confused, they would catch you up.
Yes,
so
I thought
that it was the story was written in such a way that it was paced out really well. That once I felt like they were getting off track and I wasn't following it. It was almost like they took extra efforts to catch me back up, and I liked that because it kept that mystery building as we were going as to what was going on. So I love that. That was a fantastic element of it. Something else that I wanted to touch on, and it has escaped me now. So, Keith, if you want to jump in here and not help me, but talk about whatever things you liked about it.
I liked all the things that you guys have mentioned.
Thank you.
The Sixth and Evelyn, and then the addition to Romana, their chemistry is fantastic throughout all of this.
I think so, too.
Even though Evelyn kind of gets relegated to the back burner, but she still has such a vital role. And then the fact that she's willing to stay behind with this Dalek in order for, was it Vancell at that point, to go on and complete whatever he needed to do?
Yeah.
I thought was such a great character moment for her.
Yes.
And just makes me like her even more.
I mean, she's seen now firsthand what these things are capable of.
Yes.
And yet she's willing to take the risk to protect other people and help the Doctor. I mean, that is huge for her.
Yeah. You remembered, Glenn.
I did. I remembered that I liked the fact that, although this discontinuity guide points out the fact that they actually messed up and changed the name, but Reldath is the Reldath from Sirens of Time. He's the one that's with the president. In fact, I think Reldath is the first one that decides that he wants to... no, that's not who it is. The name was so familiar when they kept saying it, and it harkens back to Sirens of Time. I can't remember the connection now. It's gone again. I don't remember what. There was a connection to Sirens of Time, and it had to do with him, and I can't remember what it was.
And I like Romana.
Other than Vansel. There is Raldith.
Well, Vansel, yeah. Vansel
there's a Commander
also,
Raldith
yeah.
and Coordinator Vansel. And it's the same president from
yeah, the president was also the other one that was the
which, and knowing what comes later, their reactions, the Doctor and Romana's, oh, it's Vansel.
That's what it was, Vansel, not Raldith. It was Vansel.
How much they dislike Vansel, I truly enjoy. Because he is not a likable character.
He's not a likable character.
He's not a likable character.
But yet he's there and he's necessary. And does what has to be done.
Vansel's who I'm thinking of was from Sire to Time.
Well, Raldith was
the first
commander.
One I killed. Yeah, but Vansel's the one that I keyed on.
Oh, wait, no. There was no Raldith in this one. This was Commander Vorna, which was a different... Okay, never mind. He's Captain... I'm spitting. He's Captain Raldith in Apocalypse Element. He was Commander or something. In
okay, all right. Well, no, okay. But it's Vansel that I was saying. And Vansel's the one that is... Isn't he the one that suggests that they kill the fifth Doctor? Okay, that's what I was... Yeah. That's what I was trying to... Okay. We talked a little bit about that, I think, at work. That's what I was thinking of, and I love the fact that character is tied in. And yeah, exactly. They still don't like... They still don't like him. He's not a likable character.
No.
Why hasn't this guy been replaced yet? I mean, I understand the CIA operates on its own in a separate thing, but once you have made a blunder of this magnitude, that you let Daleks in the door to Gallifrey, and there was a siege situation, how come you weren't taken out back and flogged? I mean, really.
I thought of another thing I liked about this story. Strong female characters.
Yes, I was just
Romana,
about to mention...
Even Evelyn and the other gal.
T, starts with T.
Yeah,
not Trillian.
Trinket.
Yes.
Strong
so good.
Female characters.
Yes.
Very, very... And always missing, not always, but frequently missing from Doctor Who.
Yes.
Here they are in this.
Frequently missing
done.
From sci-fi in
well
general,
done,
I
yes,
think.
Yes, absolutely. And well done characters.
Well done characters here. I don't know. The more we talk about this, the more I like it.
I really enjoy. This is one of the best Dalek stories I've listened to.
I have to agree, as far as audio is for certain.
Yes.
This is one of the best I've heard.
And it's better than some visual.
this is far and above that genocide machine.
I like genocide machine
was okay. But
which,
it,
and we discussed at work, this is probably better than the Daleks in Manhattan two-parter.
Oh, definitely.
And
I'll give you that.
Yeah, and Victory of the Daleks.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
Even some classic. I can't remember which R of the Daleks it is.
It's the Sixth Doctor one that I thought it was better than.
That could be.
What, you didn't like Davros' head in a jar?
No.
But regardless, one of the R's is not as good as this.
Better than Frontier in Space.
That's not a Dalek story.
But not better than Planet of the Daleks, for me.
What about Death?
I don't know. Now I like Death better than we've talked about it. I'm going to go home tonight and rewatch it. No. definitely better than Death.
I liked it better than Cats. I'll watch it again.
I think
it's
better than Death. It's better than City. It's better than Destiny. It's not better than Genesis. It's not
better than
Daleks. It's not better than Invasion Earth. So, there we go.
Speaking of Invasion Earth, let's move on to the mutant phase.
Wait. I have some...
No, I don't know. go ahead.
Just little notes. An article by Russell T. Davies in the Doctor Who Annual 2006...
Yes, you brought that up.
...refers to the events of this story, the Etta Prime incident, as one of the opening skirmishes of the Time War.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
Which is a very big thing. And then Dr. Phil, of course, would flog us unless we mentioned... The story also introduces the Monan Host, one of several temporal powers in the Doctor Who universe who possess time travel technology. The politics of the temporal powers play a major role in the Gallifrey audio series, which centers around Romana's presidency.
Looking
so you can expect more of that coming.
Looking forward to that.
Okay, now go ahead.
Well, I do like the fact that they've set up this time treaty thing, conference.
And UN of time travelers.
The CIA's kind of trying to use it to... mark the people.
Let's see what we've got.
Yeah, let's see what societies actually have time travel and why. You know, it's like, okay, we'll use this for, like, record building.
Well, I like how the Doctor gets on Vansel.
But we're not inviting the Daleks, even though they have their time tunnels.
The Doctor gets on Vansel for that. He goes, and you're using this to find, you know, it's taken you 20 years and you've got to this point. And the President says, well, at least we can kind of get a clue as to, you know, who might be involved.
Right.
Well, I'm sorry, in defense of Ansel, he should have said, at least we'll be able to figure out who wasn't involved.
Yes, yeah, that's true.
I mean, that you got that? No, you couldn't have done this. You cross them off the list. I mean,
nope.
Now, yeah, it shouldn't take
rudimentary, elementary.
It shouldn't have taken 20 years to get to this point. But that's the last.
Sorry,
I'll ever defend
I
Ansel.
No, no, about that as well. There were just little things about this I loved.
There was a lot of good to it. Okay, the mutant phase. In the 22nd century, the Daleks have occupied planet Earth. By the 43rd century, only a handful of humans survive. Still further into the distant future, a Thal scientist must choose whether to betray his heritage or see the universe destroyed. When the Fifth Doctor and Nyssa find themselves trapped in this deadly chain of events, they must decide who their real enemies are. What is certain, however, is that no matter where the Doctor turns, his archenemies, the Daleks, will be waiting for him. What possibly could be worse than that? The mutant phase.
Dun, dun, dun!
Yay! Yes!
Yay, all right. Except for the ending.
Oh, no, the ending's awesome! It's the best part! Oh, no! Oh, no!
Keith, you go first this time.
I really enjoyed this story. Just the little nods to the fact that, oh, they feel a bump, so they land. Oh, wait, we're in the Dalek invasion of Earth! And in Kansas! The Doctor's not going to run into himself here, but he's going to want to leave because it's that time frame.
You didn't just squeeze. I think we just bumped into a Dalek.
Why is this? Wait, why are there a pair of legs sticking out from under the TARDIS? He's wearing checkered pants. Uh-oh. Is there a cane nearby?
We need to leave now.
What, you didn't squee at all when he said, oh, we're in Kansas?
No, not to Kansas.
Really?
It was interesting. I perked up, and I went, oh, Kansas, nice nod. Nice name drop. Kansas is getting some props, you know.
It so rarely gets props, yeah, especially in UK-based stuff.
Yeah.
And the fact that we were returning
in the UK, I mean,
like the UK is so disdainful.
On. Superman grew up here, for crying out loud.
Well, it's Superman.
We're known for two things.
Dorothy was from here.
Okay, that's
Dorothy, Superman, okay, until Supernatural came around, there was hardly anything.
We are known for two things. We are known for Dorothy, and we are known for basketball, and that's pretty much it. The Superman thing, honestly, is
well,
a stretch.
This is where the world will end. Kansas. At least from 1980s perspective, this is where the world would end. So, no, the day after. They're going to launch a missile strike in the center of the United States.
I squeed in Supernatural when they revealed they're from Lawrence.
But they would.
I watched Jericho,
but
because it was set in Kansas.
We have very few nuclear weapons in this part.
Just an interesting side note. Forbes Field here in Topeka, which it used to be an active military Air Force base and is not anymore. It's a privately owned airfield, but it's one of 12.
Part of it's still
part
by
of
the
part of it is active.
It's one of 12 air bases in the United States that the runways are long enough to still handle B-52s. So, should something hinky go on, we are still a nuclear target.
Actually, the only reason we're a nuclear target now is because we're the only runway that can handle landing Air Force One as well, and there are bunkers out there. Anyway,
it's just always cool to see Kansas referenced, regardless of the situation.
Well, you want to know what's really cool?
Kansas got some love.
Not just the Kansas got some
been
love,
cool
but the sheriff. Even
they got
though
a
he
name.
Had this total Southern Alabama accent.
He did
accent.
Have a Southern accent.
What's totally cool.
We all talk like that here.
We all talk like that here. You're strangers. We don't talk strangers around here. We don't take kindly to strangers around here. We don't take kindly. Don't take kindly to strangers.
You have to have a little bit of metallic sound to your voice.
Well, I'm not a Robleman. But so not only was that cool that it was in Kansas. What's cool is that we invented the Dalek killer thing, man. That plague.
Our wasp.
Oh, the mutant phase.
The mutant phase is from Kansas.
It's a Kansas pesticide.
Kansas wipes out the Daleks.
They should put that on billboards. People should drive into the state, and it should say, "Welcome to Kansas, home of the Dalek-killing mutant phase." I would put that on every billboard across this state. That's how cool we are.
We didn't kill them, though. We just mutated
them. Well, we would have killed them eventually.
Into something worse. Yeah.
Hey, you give us a couple thousand years, we're bound to get something right.
Leave it to Kansas. leave it to Kansas to take something and make it worse.
Let's make Keith start this one.
I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead. He had already had.
I already had. We sidetracked.
Wow. Sean, you interrupted this week. That's unusual.
It happens from time to time.
But still, the fact that we get all the Dalek Invasion of Earth references, and then we leave, and then I totally knew
although
that...
Although it was 6 years before...
It was 6 years before, yeah. Because, and then there's the line of, oh, I bet you had something to do with that. Which, obviously, yeah.
Right.
Maybe.
Maybe. Spoilers. And then they go off, and I know the Thals are behind bringing them to Skaro. And the fact that we return to Skaro, and the fact that the Daleks are, yet again, need help. And, which, for me, out of order, I listened to this before I watched Death of the Daleks, so it kind of is another humbling story of the Daleks need the Doctor's help in fixing this. And the Doctor struggles with this
but
so
ultimately
much.
They don't.
They don't, but they think they do.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
They think...
Just, I keep remembering things.
They sorry. Think they need his help.
Right.
And
well,
so they
the Emperor
unquote,
never needed
him.
His help. The Emperor... Well, he did need his help, but in a different way.
Well,
it
yes.
wasn't a saving grace. It was a starting the paradox. But
yeah.
Go ahead.
Which and part some of me wonders how much the Emperor Dalek really knew that until the end.
Yeah,
I mean we don't get revealed to that. The Doctor doesn't know that until the end.
Right.
I wonder
no,
how much adult,
it's part of
the
mystery
Emperor.
Of the story.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, no, I think the Emperor calculated this from the beginning
that he was the reason.
Well, no, I don't think he was. He knew he was the reason in the way that he thought he was. He was going to back. He was using the doc. He was using the Doctor in order to go back and. Further the Dalek race in a different way. Save them,
yes.
but further them
yes.
so that they wouldn't go through this mutant phase and they wouldn't evolve into something that was different and not what they, you know. So he thought he was using the Doctor to go back and essentially empower the Daleks to be
stronger.
Yeah, and continue on their, on
yeah.
their path, you know.
And that's what I liked about it was the fact that he was using the Doctor, but still needed the Doctor's help in order to do it. He couldn't have done it with anybody but the Doctor.
No, yeah, I suppose that's true. But
and the fact that the whole thing was because of the Emperor Dalek.
Yeah,
that paradox
was, cool.
was fantastic.
That was cool.
And then the Doctor's explanation of, well, it's a paradox. It's not supposed to make sense.
I love that whole conversation.
That's the wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey
yeah,
of classic Who.
That was so totally... The Doctor and the Doctor like going into total Doctor mode. That well, I understand it. I just love that.
Which and he hints at the paradox issues and was like, "Well, you won't get it.
Doesn't matter. I understand." I love that. I love when he cops that attitude. I shouldn't, but I do. I love when he does that,
especially for five.
Oh yeah. I mean it's totally,
you expect it from.
Other Doctors,
right,
but for
four
right,
or
exactly. six.
Know, yeah. But for five to pull it, is it?
Ten.
Yeah.
Expect it from those Doctors. You don't expect it from
which, and
five.
This, so far, the best Fifth Doctor story we've listened
totally
to.
Totally the best Fifth Doctor
it's,
story.
Of the ones we've reviewed.
Of the audio reviews we've listened to, yes.
That's always a cravat with us.
Sorry,
that's
the
all,
best
cravat.
Fifth Doctor audio story is
up
spare
till.
Parts. But anyway, we'll get there.
Best Fifth Doctor story up till
cravat.
Now.
Yes. What's the word I'm looking for? I've used it before and I keep losing it.
Caveat.
Caveat.
Thank you.
The cravat is the thing you wear around
yeah.
your neck.
I keep doing that. It's always a caveat with us, is it? Well, of the ones we've reviewed.
Yeah.
I'm planning. You know what we need to do for our 100th? We're going to do a the best. We're going to do it. We're going to do a top 10. We're going to do what's your best Doctor Who episodes, and we're going to do a total top 10 list, and then it's going to be with a little asterisk that says
of the ones we've reviewed. Which, when we get to 100, we'll still have quite a bit under our belt.
Oh, yeah.
I love the fact that we get the Emperor Dalek in this one. I love the
fact... And the line that they have of, oh, I see we both have had a facelift since we last met. Yeah.
I love the fact that we got, I'm going to go back here to Apocalypse Element, the Black Dalek.
Yes.
In that one, which, what's the Black Dalek, what was he first introduced in? What story? Dalek's Invasion Earth.
Yeah, okay.
And then we do a story following that, taking place during Dalek's Invasion Earth. It was so cool. I was like, wow, going back and we're actually using, we don't need Davros.
Yes.
Love that. We're going back to our old roots here.
And the black to the Emperor helps me think of this in Dalek storyline forward, as opposed to Doctor Out of Order.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That helps ground that this is later in the Daleks timeline.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Even back in Dalek Invasion, there is a Dalek Emperor. Because they make reference to him.
In the Dalek Invasion Earth?
And they say, I am your Emperor. No, in this story.
In this story.
In this story, yes. They make reference to it.
I thought they made
to the fact that there is one.
The Black Dalek in Dalek Invasion Earth called home and mentioned something about the Emperor. Maybe not.
I don't remember that. I remember the Black Dalek was the one that was in charge.
He was the one that was in charge, but I definitely got the impression watching that one that he was in charge on Earth, but that he still reported to somebody else.
That's probably true, because, well, let's see, the Emperor Dalek wasn't really officially revealed until one of the Trouton stories.
Well, one of the Trouton stories.
But then they...
Evil, I believe.
They retconned it in the fact that the Emperor Dalek is the one that sent all of these Daleks to Earth and hatched this plan on Earth. I love that aspect of it. All of the retconning in this is fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of
it. There's a lot of
it. And it fits really well. It's not a retconning that doesn't work. It's perfect.
No, I would agree.
And maybe retcon's not the right word. Maybe it's just tying in. I mean, however to say that. But
explaining or... Yeah. Filling in the holes.
There's a lot of it, and it's very well done.
And Nyssa is really good in this story. We complained last week that Nyssa wasn't what we wanted. And this is more of the Nyssa that we've seen near the end of her run.
Yeah.
I'm blanking on the story that we watched that we were like, well, that should have been more of... That Nyssa was mostly on her own and shined.
We liked her in Maudwin Undead, and we liked her in Terminus.
Yeah,
those
two.
Which is her last one.
I think Terminus is the one that I'm thinking of. That this is more of that resilience on her own character that has the potential, but the other companions held down.
Yeah.
And this really lets her shine, unlike the last story.
Yeah.
Unlike Land of the Dead.
Yeah. No, and I love the fact that this, and I think Chrissy pointed this out too, that it puts the Doctor and Nyssa on this fantastic relationship where it's not exactly equal footing, but she's very beneficial to the Doctor. The Doctor's very beneficial to her. They have this fantastic level relationship. I like that. I like the fact that she's fixing the circuits on the TARDIS in this one as well.
Well, and he's chastising her. Oh, don't do that.
Yeah.
which the Fifth Doctor seems to do.
Don't fix
don't
that.
Touch the TARDIS.
The Fifth Doctor seems to do that a lot. There's a lot of moments of, well, can't we do this? No.
Yeah.
Why? I mean, he's like the worst husband in the world. He's got this massive honey-do list that Nyssa keeps nagging him about. When are you going to clean out the gutters? When are you going to do this? When are you going to do this? And he's like, the football's on. I'll get to it later. He just doesn't want to do it. Nyssa was so good in this one. And it just...
And what I almost didn't like about their relationship is the fact of... It's so strange seeing a doctor not willing to try to explain the paradox situation that they're in and the gravity of whatever situation is that they're in. That seemed very undoctor to me.
That I was okay with that because through the whole story I was under the impression that Nyssa was the cause of the paradox. That something with... And quite honestly, I was a little...
Oh, because of the sting.
I towed the line where I was disappointed because I felt like it was way telegraphed that the sting with this wasp was going to be the huge reveal of the, oh, it's an insectoid race with the Dalek. Well, guess what? I mean, come on. But then it wasn't. And so then I was back, I was backpedaling going, oh, okay, this totally didn't go where I thought it was going to go. And I was excited again. And then we get to the end, and this is why the end I didn't like, because, well, it's a paradox. It doesn't have to make sense. And it didn't have anything to do with Nyssa. It didn't have anything to do with
the Wasp.
The Wasp at all, really.
It was
the Emperor.
The awesome Kansasness of the pesticide. It just had to do with the fact that the Emperor came back and crossed his own time stream and created this thing. But the Doctor didn't feel like he could tell her that.
I didn't like that.
I felt like Nyssa when she looks at him and goes, well, that doesn't make any sense. That's where I was at. I was screaming,
I love that.
Yeah, you're right. It doesn't make any sense.
I love that they called it out, too.
Yeah, exactly. Because she calls it out, that cleaned the ending for me, though. Because I was there, too, going, well, I want to know. And he does that typical Doctor answer, and she's like, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, I liked that, though. That was a clean ending for me. Because
It wasn't. Like I said, I just...
It seemed a little rushed to me.
Leading up to make Nyssa the cause of this paradox and having an explanation for it versus not explaining it and her not being part of it, it just felt like it was such a thrown gear that it threw me there at the end. I don't know. I mean, this is... Not only is it the best Fifth Doctor Nyssa that we've reviewed, this is probably one of the best Dalek stories, period.
Agreed.
And
audio or
period?
General.
Period.
General.
Wow,
I'll put it that way.
I would agree.
It may not be Genesis?
I don't think it's the best either,
but it's up.
It's top five, for sure. And I think that's what comes from Nicholas Briggs writing it, he's got some experience with these guys.
Only a little bit.
Just a little bit. And I think that this is kind of where his expertise being funneled into this kind of showed what can be done with them, as opposed to Genesis Machine, which I enjoyed, but, you know, as opposed to Apocalypse Elements, which I enjoyed, but not so much. I mean, this one really showcased what the Daleks can be in an audio. It worked so well.
And the other two were power grabs. This one wasn't. And that was a nice change of pace for a Dalek story in general, that it's not a power grab.
I'm not sure that this is the first one that names this, but we get a name for what a paradox that creates a loop in time, in the sense that something later in the future causes something in the past that causes that paradox.
The such paradox.
It's the temporal paradox. It was the first time that we actually hear that named.
That makes
which
sense.
Is
That's a common sense
what
name.
We created in the short film we made.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes.
The Ring.
1221.
Yep. It was a temporal paradox. Sorry, glad I brought that up.
No, I agree with you. And I wish I could remember now, because he did. It had a specific... It wasn't temporal paradox. It was a...
No, he called it a temporal paradox.
No, I thought it had a real name. It was the Higgs boson. This was the blah, blah, blah paradox.
Because he said, do you know what a temporal paradox is? And she does. Okay. She does know what it is, which was cool, too, that she's able to answer him what it is. When someone in time, you know, at one event in time, creates a loop in time by... I don't remember exactly how she said it, but I specifically remember him saying temporal paradox. So.
Well, is there anything else to say about the story?
I don't think so. It's
fantastic.
And I love tying back into old Doctor stuff. Old Doctor.
It's one of the best Dalek stories I've listened to, and I agree with you guys, top of scene, and one of the best Doctor Who stories I've listened to. So far.
This, I think, definitely illustrates where Big Finish can go.
This is 15?
This is 15. We've kind of been down on a couple of the other ones that we've reviewed recently because they just haven't been up to snuff, and we've talked about, hopefully they'll get their legs
This
out of
is
them.
Where but they find their legs.
This is definitely one of the ones that illustrates
Apocalypse
what's possible.
I think they're finding their legs at this point. This is the one where... when I listened to this, I went, okay, finally Davison gets a good story.
Yes.
Finally. And this is only his fourth story.
Six has gotten other good stories before this. So
we have heard all of his.
No, we have not.
Is there one more in there?
One more before it?
Two that we have not got to yet.
We listened to Sirens.
And we listened to
Phantasmagoria is the first solo one for him. And then Land of the Dead. Red Dawn.
Oh, Red Dawn.
Red Dawn, yeah.
And Winter for the Adept.
Okay.
And that's before the story?
And those all, well, technically, yeah. Chronologically,
Release order.
Release order, yes.
Yes. Okay.
And we
release
will,
order, because some of those are worth Perry.
Well, we will do Winter for the Adept. In fact, Winter for the Adept is up in 2 weeks on the schedule. Okay. But Red Dawn, I'm holding off on. A, because it's Perry with Fifth Doctor, and you were concerned about...
I was going to be completely thrown by that
aspect. You want to be introduced to Perry with the Fifth Doctor for real before you get an audio adventure.
Sure, understandably so.
And there's a certain adversary that may be in... I'm not going to give anything out, but, you know, Red Dawn might kind of indicate something. Didn't to me. I listened to it and got all the way into it, and then they showed up. I was like, ooh! Clueless. Looking back, it's like, oh, I should have seen that coming. But no, this to me really gave me hope, because I after Keith's criticisms through Genocide Machine and how much he didn't like listening to Daleks, and then getting into the apocalypse element for me and going...
That was me that was complaining about the Daleks in Genocide.
I thought we both were.
I thought you both were. I was the only person that liked it, but I thought it was Keith that specifically said that he doesn't like listening to them.
No, it just rattled my... that particular one, there was just way too much.
I have more issue with the whispering villains than the Dalek screaming.
I think that's what it was. But yeah, just...
I don't like the Dalek screaming, but I have more issue.
There was too much Dalek. Okay, in fact, I said I was kind of hesitant to listen to the Dalek Empire stories now, because there's got to be more Dalek in that. Yeah. But these two were a good balance, though.
Yeah,
I would agree.
And that's, after your comments, then, I was a little nervous going into tonight's show, knowing that there were two. And I'll be honest, I kind of put them off. I didn't get through them until today.
Other than Apocalypse Element, having the volume issue, there isn't as much constant talking from Daleks in these.
Yeah,
that's true. I think it's broke up enough.
Yeah.
Maybe that's one of the things they
learned their lesson. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. In Genocide Machine, there's literally 4 or 5 minute chunks of audio just between Daleks. That's what was grating. That was bad in audio form.
And hard to keep track of who was talking.
I don't know. I think they have a difference in pitch enough that it was... I followed along so far. They've done a good job of that, I thought. By the way, this was loosely adapted from an audio-visual that Nicholas Briggs also wrote. So,
So hopefully this gives us a good feeling for going into the next.
Which, having listened to
Dalek story,
this is a nice set. These two, even three, are a good setup. I feel like when I go back to re-listen to this next Dalek story, I will appreciate it a little bit more.
I'm good.
Which is set right in the middle of Paul McGann's next batch.
Yay.
Which we got to get through a few more McGanns first.
Yeah.
But even before that, what's up next?
Well, it's odd that you should mention that, because coming up next on the Vortex schedule... That didn't sound anything like paper, did it?
It didn't. It's only really rapping on a wall.
Friday Night Who this coming week. The Horns of Nyman with Tom Baker and... Romana. Two.
Yeah.
And we're actually going to do a Nyman archive. Yeah, I'm not crazy.
No, you're not crazy. It's a Nyman archive.
Yeah, well, I looked at it, and for some reason it looked weird.
That's because the title doesn't give it away. Wait!
The mutant phase. What do you mean? There are Daleks in this? we're doing Big Finish number 30 in the main line, Seasons of Fear.
Which is the next Eighth Doctor story for
our line. It's the next in line for what we've been doing on the Eighth Doctor.
It times out well.
And it happens to feature the Nyman. So we get a Nyman archive next week, which will be fun. Right.
Which I've listened to this story, and I wish I would have time to listen to it after seeing
Horns of Nyman.
Horns of Nyman. So maybe this week I'm going to watch Horns of Nyman before Friday Night Who.
Makes it easier to tweet along when you've seen it.
I bet it would.
you don't know hardly, do you?
No, I don't.
You always see a new one. Every once in a while you get the
new series, and that's it.
So there are updated schedule is already on the website. For those of you that are liking to follow along at home, I've gone ahead and posted it all the way up through... mid to the end of August. Keep in mind, obviously, not knowing when the new series is coming back, we are in a state of flux.
Right.
That could change tomorrow.
Right.
But this is what our plan is at this point, is to review those. And then,
and all indicators are pointing we should be fine.
All indicators are pointing we should be fine, yeah. But indicators are kind of like TARDIS console monitors. They do strange things. Sometimes they go out. Sometimes you land on a planet you didn't mean to.
But we'll keep you up to date.
But we will keep you up to date with any changes as they develop.
All right. That's all. Let's call it for this week. Until next week, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
I'm Keith.
Cheers.
Good night, everyone.
Be seeing
you. You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.